It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Off and running we are on this, the 25th day of April, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And when you find us there on the interweb tubes, by all means, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump in and be among the early arrivers for the conversation this evening. If you do, you'll be immediately greeted by Otto DeShot and Squeaky, and possibly other people who run in before the tardy bell that we don't have. You'll also be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, on a 90-degree day, has folded space to become man cave because there's work to be done. There's a swamp cooler to be set up. There's, the preservations to be made. And there's Anatole wandering in, yes, indeed. And we have thanks to send out. We always have thanks at the beginning of every program. This program is fueled by gratitude. And thanks go out to Jim in Spain and to Kay. Thank you, Kay, and to Mark. Thank you, Jim, Kay, and Mark, for being partial sponsors of the program by being subscribers. Folks like Jim and Kay and Mark would love to see a little more in the way of more subscribers. And that's why there's a... Remember, we're in fundraising-free radio here. But there is an offer on the table courtesy of Tony in Chico, who would like to see 5 new subscribers at $10 apiece. So far, we are at 0. But, well, if we get 5 new subscribers at $10 apiece today, tomorrow... You don't want to do it after the 28th of the month because it'll just get canceled next winter in February because the 29th and the 30th, right, 31st, screwed up. This is a 30-day month anyway. But Tony and Chico will double the first month subscription for 5 $10 a month subscribers. So your 10 will become 20. And if you assume that you're not needed, you would be wrong. For instance, just today I got notification that one subscriber's subscription was being canceled by PayPal because, the transaction didn't go through. Oh, well. So, please, don't leave a kind offer like this on the table. And remember, at $10 a month, you're parting with something, and once you factor in Dr. Bill as well, you're parting with less than 15 cents per hour of programming. More like 11, probably, ciphering. 11 cents. Can you still get a postcard stamp at the post office for 11 cents? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But that's all I'm going to say about it because this is fundraising free radio, but I don't. But Tony asked me to do this, so I'm going to do this. So there it is. This, of course, is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And special treat, in about an hour, we will be joined by my dear friend and now our dear friend, Dan Fisher, properties master extraordinaire from the world of TV and film. And we're going to talk about a little bit of this and a little bit of that and see how See how his new heart is ticking along. I've been, and one of the things we're going to talk about, because it is so prevalent in the news right now, with the sort of explosion of measles there in the New York City area, I hope Dan's got a great doctor, so I'm sure the doctor is giving him appropriate, telling him to take how to take appropriate preservations. But we've got a lot of things to talk about, and we always have good conversations, Dan and I, and they are very well received. But before we get to that, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there's a couple of OMGs out there floating around, one of which just gives me the skin-crawling horrors. But before we get to that, just because there's something special about this program, whereby I say something and then shortly thereafter, it comes true. You remember when the, because it all seems so long ago now, do you remember when the redacted, dummied up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up, frauded up version of the Mueller report was released? Remember that? And do you remember how tucked away in there was that otherwise incomprehensible decision by Robert Mueller to upend 1,000 years of Anglo-American jurisprudence and declare that ignorance of the law is an excuse? And that was why he decided to let Junior off the hook, because Junior was too stupid to understand that he was breaking the law in the Trump Tower meeting with those fun-loving Russians.
You remember? Yeah, right.
Well, if you go back, you may find somewhere in the archives evidence of me saying, this is not a good thing. This is going to open a door. And it did. How do I know? Because from the pages of that hard-hitting investigative journalism tome, periodical, that is People magazine, the magazine that gives us the 100 most beautiful people in the world edition every year, because that's so very subjective. Or no, objective. One may objectively tell who the most beautiful people in the world are. We get the following. You may recognize the names of Massimo Giannulli and Lori Loughlin. For 90s folks, you recognize Lori Loughlin as Aunt Becky from Full House. And Target shoppers may recognize Massimo Giannulli as the Massimo on their Massimo brand of clothing, which I understand is being rapidly phased out even as we speak. You may also recognize the pair as being the parents who participated in a fraud scheme because they were filthy fucking rich and their kid was too stupid to get into a school that they deemed good enough. No, we couldn't have Precious Lumpkin Giannulli going off to Busted Knuckle State and Polytechnic. That's not commensurate with their level of wealth, privilege, awesomeness. So Lori Loughlin and Massimo Giannulli instead participated in a crooked criminal scheme to pretend that Precious Lumpkin Giannulli, I don't know what her fucking name is, was some sort of high-performing student athlete and get her into the University of Southern California that way. thereby once and for all cementing the name of USC that is used by their crosstown rivals, the University of California at Los Angeles, the public school, cementing USC's nickname as the University of Spoiled Children. And, of course, Precious Lumpkin Gianulli got in. Lori and Massimo, proud mama and papa, got busted. And Lori Loughlin is amazed that she is now facing time in the stir to the tune of about 2 years. Well, hard-hitting journalists at People magazine have since found out that Lori and Massimo, well, we'll put it in the words of the quote from the story. You read the complaint and they look like criminal masterminds, but they really didn't know the legalities of what was going on. They're not lawyers and they're not experts. They were parents who simply wanted to make sure that their daughters got into a good school. Cry me a fucking ocean. All over America, there are kids from hard-working families who would love to go to college, any college. Thumbfinger Community College, anything that might provide a little bit of upward hope for their adult years. And they can't go without mortgaging their very existence to some profit-driven financial institution, because Republicans have waged war on the idea of people having grants to go to college, or the government sponsoring scholarships, or like that. You know, things that the civilized world does, where countries recognize that their children are literally the future of the nation, and they say, let's educate them the best we can. Whatever it is they want to do, if they want to go to college, let's let them go to college. If they want to go and get a craft or a skill, let's make sure that there's training for that. But let's have an educated future. Let's do it right, but not in Merca. And so, yes, the Mueller too stupid to be prosecuted defense has now been mounted by Lori Loughlin and Massimo Gianulli, according to the source who spoke to those hard-hitting journalists at People. They truly believed that their actions were comparable to those of other parents who take extraordinary steps to help their children. Calling in favors, donating money to the Alumni Association, hiring consultants. Those are all things that parents do. And so they gave money to this consultant, not entirely knowing everything that was going to be done. And when it all fell apart, nobody was as surprised as they were that they were in trouble, because they're goddamn morons. But here is the money shot from the source quoted by People. She never intended to break any laws, and if she did, it was inadvertent. Yes, let's all thumb back into the Mueller report where he says that he doubted that he could prove that Donald Trump Jr. had enough fucking brains to be able to know that taking meetings with the Russians to get dirt on Hillary Clinton wasn't legal. Ow. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. So, yeah, we've got that going for us this evening. Because it's all about the thorns and all about the sides. And speaking of thorns and sides, how about this? Because this is beautiful. Now, people who listen to programs like this and, say, programs like Malloy's, I'm not sure where all it runs, but I know I run it, and Malloy runs it, and several others. The Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I first got to know Brad, what now seems a gajillion years ago, way back in like 2003, when I started doing radio again, there in America's fifth smallest radio market. Well, see, going back to Lori Loughlin there for a minute, Brother Deacon Asa asks, are we sure it's ignorance of the law and not affluenza? Oh, I think it's affluenza. There's no doubt about it. But apparently affluenza operates on the brain and creates to wealth stupid. Les is having none of it, by the way. Bull fucking shit. Lock her up. Lock her up. Just like they did for two black women who also weren't lawyers. Yep. Or, say, the woman who accidentally voted in the wrong district and is presently making small rocks out of big rocks at some godforsaken hellhole prison in, I think, Texas. Yeah. But back to Brad, Brad Friedman. This is not a bad story about Brad Friedman. Don't get me wrong. This is comparison and contrast. It's one of those intellectual devices we coastal elites engage in, even though there's nothing either coastal or elite about me. But yeah, Brad. The reason I got to know Brad. Oh, there. Okay. No, let's go back. Monique, I'm so sick and tired of this. There are people of color that change their zip codes so their children can go to better schools, but they're criticized. I'm so tired of whining white privilege. Emphasis on the whining part and the white part. Well, we didn't. And I love that they didn't intend. Which is the same thing that's used with regard to the to stupid, you know, Don Jr. Ron and Raleigh asking the question, a question for the ages. I wonder, is Massimo the new black? I'm asking for a fashionista friend. Yeah. So, Brad. I got to know Brad because Brad had shown the initiative and the interest in trying to dig down. I mean, there was a lot of hard work on Brad's part. And learning the ins and outs of the skeevy business of video game voting. Brad was on top of that shit before almost anybody else was. And so Brad really is a no-kidding expert on voting machine fraud. And voting fraud and electoral fraud and voter suppression, all of those things, because he's bothered to put in the time and the effort to become that. So imagine my surprise on this Thorn in the Side Thursday when I saw and blinked and looked and saw again that America has a new election expert. No, really. Might want to get the hockey puck for this. Might want to bite down real good. Loop the duct tape around twice. That's right. According to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and the Life Support System for a Haircut, Sean Hannity Job, Laura Trump, daughter-in-law of deranged Donnie, is now an elections expert. Yes, the Hannity Job had her on his program to talk about how elections work. Laura Trump.
Right.
Expert.
Sure.
And while I had some other things that I'd planned on getting to this evening, and we may yet, who knows? A couple of things jumped in at the last minute to move what I had previously planned further down in the great mountain of thorns on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Remember a few weeks back when a Coast Guard lieutenant, an officer in the United States Coast Guard, a guy by the name of Christopher Hassan, was discovered to be engaged in preparations for what can only be described as a horrifying series of terrorist actions in this country. The guy wrote about how he wanted to murder every human being on planet Earth. And had an arsenal of breathtaking breadth and scope. Yeah. Well, sleep tight tonight, America. Because Coast Guard Lieutenant Christopher Hassan is walking around free. Just take a minute and let that sink in. It's real. It's true. A federal judge today turned Lieutenant Christopher Hassan loose. Now bear in mind, he had been arrested just outside Washington, D.C. Upon a search of his computer, investigators discovered that he had researched the addresses of Supreme Court justices, investigated, searched on the internet for the best gun to use to kill black people. The story was broken today by the justice reporter for the Washington Post, Justin Juvenal. Breaking, he tweeted, federal judge agrees to release Coast Guard Lieutenant Christopher Hassan, who was accused of plotting terror attack by federal prosecutors. The judge says the government hasn't charged him with terrorism and murder and doesn't plan to, so no grounds to hold him. Remember, he was going to murder two Supreme Court justices. He was going to murder two social media executives. Wanted to murder TV news anchors at CNN and MSNBC. Had, just by looking at the photograph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 different weapons, boxes and boxes and boxes of ammunition, everything he would need to commit mayhem under the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And so he's walking. don't you just feel all better? A white nationalist turned loose, even though he had admitted he wanted to do some white nationalist murdering. Not murder white nationalists, but a white nationalist who wanted to go on a murder spree. Right. Compare and contrast that with the Washington, D.C. Police Department. According to Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., I know. But sometimes local is different from... But anyway, a video has surfaced of D.C. police arresting and handcuffing a 9-year-old boy for the capital crime of leaning against a car. Happened around 14th and Girard Northwest, Northwest D.C. A little kid ran away from the cop, and the cop had to huff and puff and chase him down. They were doing the run around a car thing. Now, the big, rough, tough cop finally caught the little 9-year-old boy. The kid's crying the whole time. People around are screaming in anger. And when the question was put to the Metro DC Police Department as to whether there's ever justification for handcuffing a 9-year-old kid, the following answer was delivered by the D.C. Metro Police. Just depends on whether the officer feels that there's a threat or what situation led up to. We have juveniles that are involved in all sorts of different activities within the city. Certainly we will get to the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. Mama, on the other side, asked about how it affected her, said, I was devastated. I was traumatized for my son having to go through that. His use of force was unnecessary. My son was not a threat. He was not committing a crime. He was not harming anyone. It should have never been to that. By the way, after having handcuffed the kid, he was eventually released to a parent, and in the hopes that nothing further would come of it. So to recap, basic D.C. area. White Coast Guard lieutenant who sought to find the best gun to kill African Americans and plotted the murder of Supreme Court justices and broadcast executives and broadcast, TV talking heads. And even went so far as to say he wanted to kill every human being on planet Earth. He's out walking. Little black kid leans on a car, gets taken down by a big, tough, brave peace officer. But he wasn't charged either, so. Yeah, I was saving that part for last, Ron. Query, asked Ron, was this person white? He was. Well, what the hell are you worried about? How about the SEAL team operator who's murdered his way through his deployments and is asking to be set free from the brig because of his exemplary service record? Well, of course. That's some privilege, that SEAL team privilege. I don't think it's SEAL team privilege. But, you know, who the hell am I? Right.
Busy day. Busy day. And then while we're at it, just a little something. An example of good government on the part of our partners in peace, the noble, majestic, serene, high, gracious, bloodthirsty, head-lopping barbarians over in Saudi Arabia. A few years back, some people in Saudi Arabia did a very stupid thing. They went to protests back between 2011 and 2012 in the majestic, noble, serene, highly gracious, puissant kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Now, who knows what they were protesting? I mean, maybe they were protesting the aforementioned kingdom lopping the heads off of poor women. You know, for being poor women. Or maybe they were protesting the brutal and routine everyday oppression that takes place in that filthy, godforsaken cat box of a country. Whatever the reason that they were protesting, well, a young man by the name of Mutaba al-Swaikat had gotten himself admitted to, not USC. I mean, he may be a Saudi, but he doesn't have Aunt Becky Massimo money. So he just got himself admitted to Western Michigan University. Believe me, it's no Southern Cal. I mean, it's a good enough school and everything, but it's not warm and there aren't any palm trees. And I don't think Fleetwood Mac ever recorded squat with their drum section. Well, he never quite made it. Young Mutaba al-Swaikat never quite made it to Western Michigan University. He wanted to study, and one can surmise it would have been handy to the noble, majestic, serene, high graciousness, puissant rulers of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. He wanted to study finance, how the money works. But he won't be studying any finance because it's hard to study finance when your head has been lopped from your shoulders. Because that's what happened. This past Tuesday, the 23rd of April, the bloodthirsty barbarian maniacs, uncivilized and disgusting, who run the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, got a guy with a sword to yell Aloha Snack Bar and slice through the tendons and ligaments and bone and skin and blood vessels that connected the head of Mutaba al-Swaikat to his shoulders. He had been arrested at King Fahd International Airport as he was leaving to come to America to be a student who studied finance and apparently played a little soccer along the way. Hell, at least Mutaba al-Swaikat knew how to play soccer, unlike precious Lumpkin Gianulli. But too bad. because he went to a protest once. Now, there's no evidence here to suggest that he was carrying a banner that said, "Let's cut the head off of Mohammed bin Salman," or anything like that. And he didn't have his head removed from his shoulders for protesting. No. In the most high, majestic, noble, serene, high, gracious, puissant kingdom of Saudi Arabia, expressing displeasure with anything the government does is called terrorism. And hey, if we get 4 more years of Donald Trump, that may be the case here too. Not saying, just saying. Because God knows, Julius Geezer would love that. But it wasn't just Mutaba al-Swakat who lost his head. Saudi Arabia likes to do this. Well, they don't want to just lop a head off here or lop a head off there. Saudi Arabia likes to lop a lot of heads at one time. In that regard, they're sort of like the Taliban over in Afghanistan, who would gather a lot of people together in the soccer stadium there in Kabul, and kill the shit out of a whole lot of people all at once, one at a time. You know, if they're ever going to do that to you, you want to be at the front end of the line, because you don't want your head lopped off by a tired swordsman, because then it's not so much lopping as chopping and hacking. And And because they're fucking barbarians, they haven't even figured out the guillotine yet. So that would mean they're, what, at least 250 years behind your better European methods of murdering people in the name of the state. I mean, that's what happens in the developing world, right? No, that's what happens in barbarian states. And this might be an appropriate time to mention the fact that both houses of Congress passed a resolution shutting down arms sales to the noble, majestic, serene, high, gracious, puissant kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which they then used to slaughter, you know, like little Yemeni babies and so forth. But our God Emperor, Orange Julius Caesar, vetoed that legislation, so the guns and the bullets and the bombs and the missiles and the parts for the aircraft and so forth will continue to flow to our partners in peace there at the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, what's a finance student here or a finance student there? Don't forget, says Ron in Raleigh, they're also really close friends of Jared Kushner, and are our second greatest allies in the Middle East. What's a little head lopping among friends? Can't wait for that Middle East peace proposal from Jared. They went to Jared. Head lopping is a time-honored family profession in Saudi Arabia. Son, you're going to be a head lopper. I'm a head lopper. My father before me was a head lopper. His father before him was a head lopper. Head lopping runs deep in our family, son, and I don't want you to get any notions that you're going to run off and do something like studying finance. Here's a paring knife. You can start learning to sharpen things, and here's a whetstone, and make sure you put a nice edge on it. I'll show you later how to do the the hair test. Don't see if it cuts paper. Cutting paper dulls a good blade. The hair test is the way to go, son. Because remember, we're fucking barbarians. Right. But we get away with it because, gosh, we've got some hydrocarbons in the dirt. You know, when we pray those five times a day, I should tell you now, I'm not praying for world peace or anything. No, son, I'm praying that the infidels in the West continue to make sure and not leverage anything like wind or solar power or tidal energy so that they can get free, the world can get free of this filthy, cancer-causing goo that we pump out of the ground. And that means the money will keep coming in here, and your son can be a headlopper, and your grandson can be a headlopper, and your great-grandson can be a headlopper, son. Tradition. That's what we're about here in the noble, majestic, serene, high, gracious, puissant kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Headlopping. God save the king. Right.
Ha.
Does he see fields of green? Red roses too. No. This is no time for, singing, and it's certainly no time for, what a wonderful world. News has apparently gotten out about that good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Coast Guard lieutenant who is now walking the streets again. Let's check in with Wolf Blitzer over at CNN.
House Oversight Committee on Immigration, that's just one of several subpoenas the White House is defying as Democrats will try to figure out a way to push forward.
All right, Sunland, thanks very much. Sunland Sarfati up on Capitol Hill. And yet there's more breaking news. A federal judge has just ruled that a U.S. Coast Guard officer accused of plotting a domestic terror attack must be released from detention. Christopher Hassan faces weapons and drug charges, but has not been charged with terrorism. Our justice correspondent, Jessica Schneider, has been gathering more information. It's pretty surprising. Why has he been released?
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, hold on there, Butch. They had a lot of time. The Trump FBI and the Trump Department of Justice and Trump's Attorney General Bill Crooked as a Hot Dog's Hind Leg Bar to put forward the evidence that this guy was a white nationalist murderer, terrorist in the morning. Why you reckon they didn't do that? I mean, why? Wait. I'll be dipped. I'll bet Lieutenant Christopher Hassan is one of those very fine white supremacist murderers. What do you think?
Released.
Well, he's going to be released at Wolf, and the judge said that really his alleged crimes don't fit this standard for continued detention. So this is Coast Guard Lieutenant Christopher Hassan. He's been in jail since mid-February. He's accused of plotting a domestic terror attack, but a grand jury has actually only indicted him on weapons and drug charges. So Hassan's public defender saying in court today that the case against Hassan has really been overblown. And the attorney even went so far to say that Hassan's views aren't that different from those of President Trump.
Wait, cowbell for CNN. Have we ever given CNN a cowbell before? I don't think so. This is the time. The public defender saying that Lieutenant Christopher Hassan's views really aren't that different from those of Donald Trump. And, well, Bill Barr to prosecution certainly wouldn't want to be prosecuting anybody with views close akin to those of, well, Donald Trump. I think we have our answer, Alex.
Hassan allegedly kept a hit list of Democrats he wanted to kill, and he kept more than a dozen firearms in his apartment, which you can see there. But his attorney said the names that Hassan allegedly assembled weren't actually part of a hit list, but instead, quote, looks like the sort of list that our commander-in-chief might have compiled while watching Fox News in the morning.
Wowzer. You gotta give style points to Elizabeth Oyer. Elizabeth Oyer is the public defender who got Christopher Hassan boosted from the stir. That says something. And I'm not going to goon on her as a public defender. She did exactly what her job is to do. She zealously represented her client, even though her client wanted to find the very best gun for murdering African Americans. And gosh, that wasn't a hit list. I mean, if that's a hit list, then that's a hell of an argument to make there, Ms. Oyer. I mean, that's some real Clarence Darrow stuff you got going on there. This isn't a hit list. This is no different than, the president, the Twitter timeline of the president of the United States. Son of a gun. And the judge bought it.
Hoo-wee.
Hit list, but instead, quote, looks like the sort of list that our commander-in-chief might have compiled while watching Fox News in the morning.
Oh, time out. Just one more. Sorry. But it takes a lot of... Now, remember, somewhere along the way, Elizabeth Oyer went to a law school, had more than a cup of coffee, obviously, got handed a real live bona fide, no kidding, law degree, and it generally takes someone with a little bit of altruism and willingness to suffer to go and be a federal public defender because they're not paid well and their budget is constantly under attack by Republicans, mostly. And, you know, Democrats who want to go back to conservative districts and say, see there, I really put the fucking on them criminals. I helped cut that public defender budget some more so you can sleep tight tonight. Yes. But there's that little reference in there to our commander-in-chief. Now, I'm assuming, dangerous business, I know. I'm assuming that Elizabeth Oyer was not showing up in uniform because she's a JAG Corps officer assigned to defend him. In which case, Donald J. Trump, neither Donald J. Trump nor any other president of the United States, is her commander-in-chief. Neither is he our, or any other president, our commander-in-chief. If one has even a passing interest in the Constitution of the United States, one knows that the president of the United States is only, I repeat, only the commander-in-chief of the armed forces and only in time of war. The rest of the time, we leave the running of the military to the generals and the admirals and all the folks with all the jewelry on their fancy little uniforms. Yeah, I know. Ron in Raleigh says, wowee, that public defender's not long for the public defender's office. She'll be recruited at a white shoe firm lickety-split. Yet maybe she can go over to Jones Day, who's having the living bee Jesus suit out of it for their frat bro culture, in which lots of women are recruited, but very few ever make partner, and most of them wind up being abused in one way or another, according to the allegations in that lawsuit. Yeah, I think you're right, Steve in New York pointing out, I think it's time to refer to Trump as Barr's client. Because the United States of America damn sure isn't his client. Interesting you would bring that up, Mike in Cascadia asking, subject line, Gitmo. So are we holding those poor souls in Gitmo forever since they were the worst of the worst of the worst, sir? And if we let them go, they might commit terrorism? Yeah, but see, they got... They're lacking something. Actually, they got something that Lieutenant Hassan is lacking. They got way too much Middle Easternness and way too much melanin in their skin, whereas Lieutenant Hassan apparently has next to none. Yeah, it's hard to catch the terrorism if your skin isn't dark. Sunlight and terrorism, it's absorbed by melanin through the skin, don't you understand? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our commander-in-chief. Well, now, I wonder which uniform she wears. But, you know, that's one of those dangerous little steps that we take toward fascism that nobody notices. And it doesn't matter whether you're watching MSNBC or CNN, Fox or CBS, ABC or NBC, or even PBS. They all make that same stupid mistake of just that they get tired of saying the president, the chief executive. Nobody says first magistrate anymore since George Washington's time. So every now and then they just salt in a commander in chief as a tertiary reference. Because it pretties up the copy and makes the folks over at the AP style manual happy. But it has no actual relationship to reality. It's just one of those little things that drives me as a bit of a student of the Constitution, Mike Batty. Because it's simply not true. Anyway,
the defender actually adding to that the racial slurs that Hassan wrote are now part of the, quote, national vocabulary, saying Donald Trump uses similar epithets in his everyday language and tweets. So some strong words there from the public defender. But prosecutors disagreeing. The assistant U.S. attorney in Maryland said Hassan was ready and willing to carry out a massive attack, putting it this way, saying this is combat gear. There is no reason to have this. The defendant intended to take his weapons and go. But the
Okay there, noble pleader of the Justice Department. Why didn't you develop the fucking evidence? It was all right there. Language indicating a targeted desire to hit specific targets. A desire to use violence in order to achieve political goals. Ding, terrorism. Where the hell are we recruiting our DOJ wait. Out of the Pat Robertson CBN and Jerry Falwell schools of law, that's where. I agree, Todd. Todd says this is the most disturbing story I've heard in some time, using the president as a reference point in a defense. You may be right, Les. Instead of commander-in-chief, she may have meant to say mein Führer. Mm-hmm. But then again, just catching up with some things. Remember Cesar Sayoc? The guy who mailed all the bombs to all those people he determined were not sufficiently obsequious to Julius Geezer, the guy who himself wanted to commit mass murder, well, he got charged because, he wasn't a commissioned lieutenant in the United States Coast Guard. He didn't have a Wilbur Ross over at Commerce who is in charge of the Coast Guard. I know. Who knew the Coast Guard wasn't under the Pentagon like all the other uniformed services? Well, they're not. They're under the Department of Commerce for some reason, and so maybe Wilbur went to bat for him. You never know. He had someone willing to go to bat for him. Cesar Sayoc didn't. And so Cesar Sayoc has thrown himself upon the mercy of the court and pled guilty and offered a sentencing memo. the pre-sentence memo, I should say. That pre-sentence memo argues, well, yes, that's good, Randy. That's a little jingle there. Randy and PA, you mean Cesar Jasok. But his lawyer is saying that he mailed all those pipe bombs because steroids. Remember, Cesar Sayoc was the pizza-delivering Christian stripper. And if you want to be a really top-notch pizza-delivering Christian stripper, I guess you have to roid up real good so you can have those bulging muscles. But according to the Florida Sun Sentinel, he wrote a note to his judge. And in that note to the judge, he said he'd been abusing steroids for over 40 years, had used 274 different supplements and vitamins before he got busted, which means before he started mailing bombs to people. In his sentencing letter, he says he was trying to sort out first how to tone down the liberal left violence platform, because he was convinced that Democrats were encouraging people to be violent. This is because of outfits like Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and Glenn Beck, and Alex Jones, and Sean Hannity, all out there hooting, and you know, the lunatics that we play on Wednesdays, who shriek and scream that Antifa is out there being mean to the poor, misunderstood Nazis. And he said somewhere along the way that since he's been behind bars, he's started hearing voices, and he's had psychological problems. He's been depressed, and he's had high anxiety and vertigo. And yes, yes, Cesar Sayoc has suffered from loneliness. But then this, if you were surprised to hear Lieutenant Hassan's lawyer argue that he was no different in, you know, when he said he was looking for the best gun to kill black people, he was no different than the President of the United States, and keeping a list of people he wanted to murder, that's no different from anything that Donald Trump might do on any given day. And, you know, who's to disagree? But Cesar Sayoc along the way also noted that politics is dirty, ruthless, deadly. I wish it had never come along into my life. When he is sentenced on August the 5th, he's looking at anywhere from 10 years to life. He said, by God, he was on the front lines of a war between right and left. But that even though he mailed bombs all over America, he didn't intend to hurt anyone. You know, just like Lori Loughlin didn't intend to violate the law. He's pleading. I don't know when this letter was written, but if it was written after the release of the Mueller report, after maybe he'd seen news of the sort of rebooting of 1,000 years of Anglo-American jurisprudence to allow ignorance of the law to be an excuse, stupidity to be an affirmative defense. Well, why wouldn't you use it? But the best part of it all is where he says that when he heard of the candidacy of Donald J. Trump, He said it was like a new found drug. Yeah. A newfound drug. Probably is. Because God knows I've seen a lot of brains around here rewired by letting the effect of maggots loose in their brains. Makes you say stupid things like, Trump's gonna bring back the coal industry. Or, why don't they just leave that Trump alone? He's just trying to make America great again. Or, it makes Christians say things like, I don't see no problem with putting little babies in cages. Jesus never said nothing about not doing that. And by the way, the lawyers for Cesar Sayoc have asked the court not to conduct a psychological exam of Cesar Sayoc. Probably because it would prove he's absolutely insane. Instead, they're going to rely on the steroids defense. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Hassan is still going to be walking the streets soon because, well, the Department of Justice couldn't be bothered to develop evidence of terrorism.
Judge here siding with Christopher Hassan, saying that he will soon be released and the terms of his release will be decided at a later hearing. But still, the judge saying he has grave concerns about Hassan, especially because he stockpiled those weapons and even conducted online searches for the home addresses of multiple Supreme Court justices. So because Hassan...
I love how they all... Multiple Supreme Court justices. I'm pretty sure those multiple Supreme Court justices aren't John Roberts, aren't Sammy Bad Breath Alito, aren't Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas, aren't Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, and aren't Brat Kavanaugh, you know, Squee.
Is likely still a threat. The judge put it this way when talking about his eventual release, saying he's got to have a whole lot of supervision. Somebody who's got eyes and ears on him like nobody's business. So,
yeah, I'm sure that the FBI will do that. You know, the FBI that is under the Department of Justice that's headed by Bill Barr to prosecution. Yeah, you bet. Maybe they'll even watch him go into a gun store and buy some new guns. Ron and Raleigh with a note. I'm thinking, do you reckon that Cesar Sayoc listened to too much Huey Lewis in the news? Oh, yeah, that music, that'll make people, that rock and roll music will make people. I mean, I want a new drug, right? Sure. Welcome to 2019. Welcome to spring, where a guy gets to walk the streets even though he plotted murders. Because, well, it's not, maintaining a list of people you want to murder isn't much different than what the President of the United States does every day. Sure. Let's take a step back from the ledge, though, shall we? It's about 4 minutes past the hour, and I look forward to these conversations more than my buddy knows. But I'm glad they do happen from time to time because they afford me a chance to take a deep breath and not be quite so gobsmacked by things like what we opened the program with. Talking, of course, about my buddy, our buddy, Dan Fisher, properties master extraordinaire, fantastic writer, chronicler of movies he has loved, and presently working at a secure, undisclosed location on a secure, undisclosed TV program that we hope to hear someday about, he said, leaving a proposition hanging at the end of the sentence. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Hey, I'd like to request a song for a girl that doesn't know how I feel about her. And I just thought, you know, if I dedicate Shannon Is Gone to her, she might really know how I am as a person. Could I do that?
You absolutely can. And I'll get it on after the next commercial break. You have my word.
All right. So thank you. Hello, buddy. We are buddies. This is true.
We are. I mean, that's the, yeah. in West Virginia, you got buddies.
It's actually more like it's really a 3 or 4 syllable word. It's like buddy, mm-hmm. or something like that. It definitely. Hey, buddy. That's how I remember it.
Yeah. Hey, buddy.
That's
the Southern West Virginia pronunciation, and it actually comes out. It comes out of the coal mines.
Really?
Yep. It's a coal mine thing. I remember my dad saying, people would walk in, hey, buddy. And he'd say, I never mind coal with you. Buddy was a term of art for people who labored deep in the bowels of the earth together, because that was the guy who would save your life when the roof caved in on you.
Once again, I just in the first 5 minutes, I've learned something new for the day. And I'm going to go now, because I don't think we can top that. You're on your own.
I think we owe it to the community to try, Dan. Don't be such a shrinking violet.
Well, I can tell you my first real experience with the word buddy and its usage of it in my direction, which is when I was a kid in Middleburn, West Virginia. Sometimes there were young peers, or sometimes older than me by a year or two, who for whatever reason decided that they did not like me. And would occasionally like knock me over when I was walking down the hall, or smack me on the back of the head. Or did you ever get this one where they pretend to spit in the back of your head? They do this like, it's not really spit. It's just sort of a quick puff of air. But you just can't help it. When they do that, you have to rub the back of your head to feel if there is spit.
Yes.
You remember that one?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those same guys would do that to me in my earlier days and throughout high school even. Later on, when I had a bar band from age 18 to 22, and I would play in the area, and we had a bit of small town popularity. Those same guys that would be like, you know, hey, asshole, or hey, euphemism that I don't care to repeat here.
Right.
Those same guys would come up to me on our breaks, go, hey, buddy. So that there's always sort of a creepy, twingy feel I have to that, because it's. I keep waiting for that fake spit thing on the back of my head to come back whenever I hear.
Well, my skin's crawling 5 minutes into the conversation, so I'd say we're succeeding on a level that most radio can only aspire to.
Well, you see, I thought I would also bring, you know, all different kinds of elements to talk radio tonight. So I thought I'd do a little psychotherapy, a little Dr. Laura Ingalls or whatever her name was. I know that Laura Ingalls was actually Little House on the Prairie, but she's Dr. Laura something or other, right?
Yes. Well, there was Ruth Westheimer, but yeah, Dr. Laura was the right-wing malpractitioner.
On this show, we will only talk about elections. We will not talk about erections.
Right, exactly.
Not on the air.
I think that's a good call. Given
our mutual general age range, we're both very virile men, and we have no problems with such things.
So no,
why,
not,
why,
no, none at all.
Why waste oxygen talking about this?
We're absolutely
nonsense.
Secure. We're absolutely secure.
Yes, absolutely. But toward the end, I've been listening for about the past 45 minutes or so since I got home from work, And you're rather serious tonight, and so I hope your listeners might understand if we veer into a little bit of frivolity tonight, just a bit. I'm feeling a little silly.
I'm up for a veer.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's important to talk about the news of the day, and it's important to be aware. You know, that's very important, to be aware of what's going on, and to try to figure out for yourself what you think about it. But at the same time, you know, I was just wondering to myself when you were just talking toward the end of it, especially, I thought to myself, you know what? Like, there are days where I just don't feel like reading the news. I don't feel like listening to to anything that's happened in the day. I don't want to know what Trump tweeted because it only gets more and more crazy. But Bob has to keep up on the news. I mean, I know you do as a personality trait, but you do 3 hours of live talk about the news a night, 5 nights a week, right?
Yeah, it's like a Vegas act, only depressing.
But how do you do that? I mean, how does that not burn you out, to that you have to read this stuff every day? I imagine you put in at least a couple hours every day into just figuring out what you're going to talk about by looking at what's going on, and then you got to talk about it. How does that just not depress the crap out of you?
You know, that is, oh, what a throwaway line. That's an interesting question, Dan. But it's a combination of a lot of things. It's having been dipped by the heel in this stuff from practically birth. It's what happens when you get taught to read before you go to first grade. There were no kindergartens back in my day. We had to really learn. We had to figure it out in first grade.
Wow. I went to kindergarten in the Pittsburgh area. Maybe it's different where you were.
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, Alabama, please. We were busy playing in the ditch when we were five. also a formative moment. But seriously, you remember that passage in To Kill a Mockingbird where Scout is sitting on Atticus's lap and she learns to read because she's watching him read the Mobile Press Register.
Uh-huh.
It was like that. You know, we got the newspaper every day. My mom and dad would pass it back and forth, and I would look. I would either sit on and with mom or with dad, and they were teaching me to read. And so, boom, newspaper, read. So that's what captivated me. But I love reading all manner of things. And as much or more than anything else, on one of the rare occasions where I had a little bit of counseling, the work that we did was actually geared towards some of that stuff. And the counselor was pretty good back then and said, look at the stuff you're interested in, for God's sakes. You like journalism. You like theater. You like archaeology and sociology.
Oh, I forgot about the archaeology with you, but go on.
You're fascinated with the classics and human behavior from 2,000 years ago. You're desperate to figure out why people behave the way they do and what happens when they do. He said, it appears to me you have a desire to connect dots, and that was before connecting the dots was even a euphemism in popular culture.
No, I just used to like to make the bunny rabbits when I connected the dots.
Yeah, or, you know, and, you know, draw Spunky, the little turtle in the back of the matchbook. Right.
Yeah, you might win a free scholarship to an art school and learn how to draw comic books. This was my dream. Anyway, back to you, Bob.
But that's a big part of it, and you know, it goes back to all the other cool kids had the good jobs working at McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and so forth. And I got stuck at a radio station reading the news. And when you read it, you learn to write it. And
How old were you when you were reading the news on the air? How old were you?
The minute I turned 16, maybe a little bit before.
So you had that deep basso profundo voice, like when... after puberty, or for all I know, did you have it coming out of birth? Were you like, hello, mother? You know, was
hi,
that
dad.
You? Mama.
I think it always, I got it from my dad. And by the time I was 13, I was ready to audition for the Statler brothers. You know, that one guy.
Yeah. Boomba ba-doomba, baby.
Or
this is for the youth audience, because the kids out there are just nuts about the Statler brothers.
Oh yes, they are. They absolutely are.
Alabama, yeah. It's Beyonce who?
Yeah. Alabama, by the way. Alabama is the headline act at the West Virginia State Fair this August. I'm going to be hard pressed not to go to that.
Hey, let's go deep into this for just a second.
Okay.
I have something to brag about. For all of you Alabama lovers out there, all 12 of you that might be listening right now, we used to go to Myrtle Beach every summer for vacation. And I remember my dad coming back from like a local Myrtle Beach bar with my mom and said, we saw just this really great country act. I know you kids don't like country, but you'd like these guys. They're called Alabama, and they're going to be stars because they're just the best band I've heard in years. And honest to God, this was like 2 years before Alabama broke big. So I think that I wonder if that's where they really got their mass following. Like a lot of West Virginians I knew, that was their summer vacation. Everybody went to Myrtle Beach that could afford it. Those who had the jobs in the factories and that didn't get laid off or whatever, they saved their money. That's where we went, was Myrtle Beach a lot of the time. And I think they were a house band at this Myrtle Beach bar, country bar. So the more you know. I just wonder if like all these people went to this bar, not just West Virginia, but that's how they built their following. And now they're headlining the West Virginia State Fair. It used to be Eddie Rabbit, I remember, and Crystal Gayle.
Oh, who didn't love Crystal Gayle?
Yeah, and then they did that duet, Just You and I. But anyway, again, all the young hip-hop kids out there are wondering, why am I listening to this show? Dad, do I have to? Yeah, son, it's good for you.
I'm not taking the duct tape off until it's over. Well, now, something similar happened to me earlier today. We were on the way home. I had to stop at the Wiggling Pig. Needed half and half and grits and hot pepper cheese, because grits and hot pepper cheese is my comfort breakfast. And if there's no half and half, there's no coffee. And I wander in, and I'm standing there getting ready to check out, and I realize that I'm hearing The Clash on the Muzak.
Yeah, I saw that on your Facebook thing. What was it? It wasn't Lost in the Supermarket, so I'm going to guess here. It was probably... should I stay or should I go? Right?
No, I would have. Oh, I would
Rock the Casbah. Then
I would have guessed Rock the Casbah. No, it was Train in Vain.
Train in Vain. Yeah, because that was a single too. That's true.
Yeah, that was the single they didn't want to include on London Calling, but were forced to by the label.
Yeah, well, you know, and it was the mystery track then too, which
yeah,
which
wasn't
was
it, well
cool.
that was their little act of rebellion. They didn't list it. It just happened.
It just happened. That's why they're the Clash and we're not. They were just the best, but
somewhere in the great beyond, Joe Strummer's going yes. Well, more like Joe
anyway,
Strummer's
there,
Joe Strummer's family is.
Okay. Yeah. So you had your hot cheese, your hot pepper cheese, your grits, your half and half.
And I hear The Clash, and I realize that, and so I get back in the car, and I said, you know, I can just imagine all the kids out there saying, do they sing like that without auto-tune? And
yeah.
How did they sample all those instruments? Where did they sample those from?
Yeah, it used to be a time with – I wrote about this recently where I said, the revelation of punk was that you didn't have to be able to sing very well and you didn't have to be able to play your instruments very well. As long as you could stand up there on a stage with a guitar in your hand and make noise, as long as you had the attitude, that was good enough for punk. Now, and I like a lot of hip hop, but with hip hop, you don't even need the instruments and you don't even need to be able to sing. You still have to have the attitude and you do have to be clever with words. I mean, there's a lot of good flow out there, Bob. Do you know flow? I'm not talking about the insurance woman. I'm talking about F-L-O-W. Do you have flow? You actually do have flow, whether you know it.
I'm familiar with the word, but if you challenge me to define it, I would be lost without the internet.
Well, it's just the ability to just spew out the words machine gun style for however many stanzas without stopping, with barely taking a breath, and creating this tapestry of thought. And for a lot of people who are of my age that are like, rap is crap and all that. I mean, if you really listen to a lot of it, it's like, holy cow, you can't do it. I can't do it. I can't come up with all of those words.
No, never in a million years.
In a syncopated rhythm like that. I can't do it, but they can do it, and it's not crap. It's not what you like, but it's not crap.
And no, there's a lot. See, I'm weird like that, though, because to me, I see it as sort of stripped down, and or hear it as sort of stripped down and deconstructed. White guys talking about hip hop. Yeah, this is going to be big.
I'm trying to keep the kids from going to their video games after we had a 10-minute
Gus might be listening for God's sakes. Yes, my grandkids are too young to listen at this point in time because I still try to moderate my various and sundry Middle English and Germanics and Anglo-Saxonisms so that they don't hear Opa talk like that. But no,
Opa,
Opa, yes. It's German.
I thought it was papas and meemaws down in.
Well, it is, and I really didn't want to be one of those.
I got it.
So we settled on Opa.
I secretly sneer for now, but I'm not a grandfather yet. Please, children, do not make me a grandfather. Don't get pregnant. Go on.
Yeah, you're not. I don't care. It's like having kids all over again. Because no matter how hard you try, you're never going to be ready for it. But anyway, I hear it as a sort of as stripped down and essential. And when I hear good hip hop, I hear Homer.
Not Simpson, but the
Bard. Yes.
Yeah, the philosopher.
Because those same sing, if you ever hear someone doing justice to the Iliad in ancient Greek, those rhythms are there. Those syncopations are there. So, it's all just a manifestation of art on this little planet that happens to be the only planet in the universe for which we have proof that people do art, that there are people and that there are sentient consciousness and people and they do art. So I dig it.
Yeah, and I'm all for art. And kind of draw art, the. I don't just mean the highfalutin stuff.
No, I draw the line at Southern Quartet a cappella gospel. Because I got several years of that, and it's enough to last anyone a lifetime.
Well, sure. You could take anything. You could take pizza, and if you tie me to a chair like Malcolm McDowell in Clockwork Orange, and you shove pizza down my craw for 30 days straight round the clock, I'm never going to want to have a slice of pizza again. So the same could be, I'm just trying to attach this analogy to your white Southern gospel, which is country gospel, right? So, which can be lovely music, especially any music that's heartfelt is great music. But I never
heard the Happy Goodman Family, did you?
I know Dickie Goodman, Mr. Jaws. Do you remember that?
Yes, wrong Goodman.
Okay.
No, but, we're talking Vestal Goodman. There is a city.
Do you suppose there's any of your listeners out there who are so freakishly fans of yours that they just Google constantly throughout your show?
Yes.
To try to find out what Mr. Jaws and Dickie Goodman is?
Yes, they do. They have a name, Dan. They are the Horn Family Community Congregation Ad Hoc Research Department.
Oh, okay. I thought Hornheads might be good, too.
Well, Hornedanistas, Hornies. Yes.
Okay. But you notice I'm asking you a lot of questions tonight. I'm trying to focus on you a little bit. I don't know if when you have guests on, when you do have guests, they're usually on to like plug a book or something, right?
Right. That's why I don't do a lot of them, because it is transactional on the level of a strip joint.
Well, I am working on a novel, as you know. I finished the first draft, 330 pages and 13 chapters, and now I'm on the second draft, which is going to take me forever, because all I do is look at it and go, oh, this is bad. This is bad. How do I fix it? I don't know. I was like, oh, I'll get the framework down and it'll be easy. It's never easy. But I'm not plugging the book yet because it's not for sale yet. And you did manage to plug the little series I have on my Facebook page, Movies I Have Loved.
Which I my wife and I are both fans.
Oh, great. It's a shame I don't know how to monetize anything. Lori Loughlin's kid is 18 and she makes a lot of money. Just
well, can I interject?
Of course. It's your show. How could you not interject?
Well, no. It's a conversation.
But please interject.
I'll tell you real quick. Get out your happy little cell phone. Fire up your Facebook. And instead of just putting them there in print, set yourself up something that passes for a little teleprompter. and learn how to edit video and edit, you know, because usually like with your movies I have loved, somewhere down the thread there will be a clip that you found on YouTube.
Yeah, I try to put a clip in every day.
Yeah, right. Like with the, I was sitting in the parking lot waiting to go in with Agnes for one of her doctor's appointments earlier today, and I watched the awesome Chuck Yeager breaks the sound barrier clip from The Right Stuff.
Oh my God, that's like porn to me watching that.
I know, and your observations made it better because, hey, no CGI, no C's for the GI.
And I've watched that sequence enough times. I don't know if you guys, again, I keep talking to your listeners if you don't mind. If you guys haven't seen The Right Stuff or haven't seen it in a long time or whatever, at the very least, go to YouTube and there's a clip of Sam Shepard as Chuck Yeager, who is a West Virginian, by the way, probably the greatest West Virginian of all time, in my opinion. He broke the sound barrier, was the first to do it. And this movie dramatizes it. And the way they shoot this scene, when you watch it, you realize how simply it's done. Like nowadays, they would CGI the shit out of it, and there'd be all these impossible shots. No, they did it in a combination of just of Sam Shepard sitting in a cockpit set, and there and you can tell like people are shaking the camera and shaking the set, and there's quick shots to the pressure gauge and the macrometer and so forth. And then there's also shots of airplanes flying through, some of which are real, just airplanes. Like just they made an airplane look like the glamorous Glynis. But other shots I read are just like somebody took a model airplane, threw it up into the air, and they just rolled the camera on it. And they did that a bunch of times until I guess they probably broke the airplane. And then they looked at the footage and they were like,
they only had one.
You never know. As a prop master, yeah, they probably have at least eight. Eight is usually my default for anything, unless they tell me
I'm
otherwise.
I'm thinking back to eighth grade and the phone, okay? I'm sorry. That's
just, eighth grade and the phone. Yeah, it's
continuity is everything.
Continuity is everything. And somehow they took all these very simple elements and through a combination of the way they shot it, the way they cut it, and this wonderful music by Bill Conti, which won an Oscar. And Bill Conti also did the Rocky theme, by the way, and the music for that movie. So he knows how to make inspiring music. If you watch this, just this one clip, either through my thing or on YouTube, it's like, oh my God, you get more joy and satisfaction out of that than most things you've paid $13 for in a theater for the last year, I swear. Let me
put okay, but seriously, just to put a bow on that part of it, Dan.
So
you do all these as videos, you put them on YouTube, you get more than 10,000 people to subscribe to your page, and then you start getting paid. Jesus Christ, Dan, there are people out there getting money for playing video games and letting other people watch.
Yeah. I don't know. Am I not ambitious enough? Am I, you know, it's
no,
I'm not
you're
like
too,
you, Bob.
You're too
create this media empire. You're raking in the bucks. What?
You're too Gen X. You're too Gen X. You're too throw an airplane in the air. Okay.
To those who have no idea what we're talking about, I decided to do this thing, a series that I call Movies I Have Loved, which doesn't necessarily mean the greatest movies of all time. What it means is whatever a movie that I have seen in my life that at one point or another I have loved, I might not love it now, but at some point when I was 9 or 12, or, you know, at one time I thought St. Elmo's Fire was a great movie because I was 21, 22 years old.
It spoke to you.
And I could identify with those kids. It spoke to me.
Oh, what? I was 13 and I saw Xanadu 4 times because I was in love with Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, and Shay, baby. Yeah, with the hair. She had the best hair, Olivia. And eyes. She was a sweetheart. There were all kinds of movies I've seen in my life that if either the love is still here or I loved it at least at one time, like Dr. Doolittle in 1967 was the first movie that I loved. I had a talking Dr. Doolittle doll, and my mom would play the Dr. Doolittle soundtrack at night to get me to settle down and go to sleep. So I love that movie. And then later I watched it, and I'm like, this is not a good movie. And the same with St. Elmo's Fire, which I mentioned a while ago. I love that movie when I was 21, 22. But when I'm 55, I look at these Andrew McCarthy and Demi Moore at that age going, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, boo-hoo-hoo. And I'm like, you guys are gorgeous. You're going to be just fine.
Yeah, you know, shut the up.
Stop. You went to Georgetown University. You all look like you jumped off the cover of Vogue. I wouldn't whine too much about your futures. You got futures, you guys. Even Judd Nelson had
well,
a future,
and that's sort of hand in hand with the angst in Breakfast Club.
Yeah. Oh, one of the funniest podcast things I heard in a long time was Gilbert Gottfried's podcast. He had Matthew Broderick on, and in the first 5 minutes, Broderick says, "I and I'm not going to do a Gilbert Gottfried impression." But Gottfried says to him, to Matthew Broderick, to his face, he goes, "I got to confess something to you. I fucking hated Ferris Bueller's Day Off. This is a kid that doesn't want to go to school, and he just doesn't go. And somehow or other, he's the hero, and the principal, whose job it is to make sure he goes to school, he's the bad guy for making trying to make sure he goes to school." And it's like, you know what? You're right. This kid is an entitled little shit. And but yet, when you're 16 or 20, or even now, I know people that still love the movie. But if you look at it that way, yeah, he is an entitled little shit. And if he were my entitled little son, I'd make sure he got his ass to school.
Well, and his parents were idiots.
Parents are idiots.
And it's also formulaic.
People like formula. I mean, that's Law and Order's formula, and it's a great show.
Yeah.
But you know, people sometimes want – that's the thing, too. You know, I sometimes get accused of being too dilettante with my movie choices, that like, oh, you know, you only like things in black and white or in foreign language or so forth. It's like, I get that you're going to want to see a Ferris Bueller or Avengers. We all need that every once in a while. You know, I keep trying to spin everything back to something I said 15 minutes ago. So here is this spin back, which is that, you know, I don't know if there are days I don't want to know what's going on in the world. I don't want to hear what Trump put on Twitter last night, because I know it's going to be something that's going to just make me angry. And so I just say to myself, I'm not in the mood to be angry today. I know it's denying myself information. I know that I could use that information to make decisions which could affect the world if only I gave a shit. But today, I'm gonna read about a movie I saw in 73. I'm gonna listen to a podcast interview with Adam West, the original Batman. I'm gonna do these things to take my mind off of things.
I should do more of that.
Well, you don't have a choice, my friend. You have to fill 3 hours every night live. You're on the trapeze every night, putting out this stuff. I don't know how you do it. I did that one show with you where I was on from 6 to 9, and by the end I was completely hoarse and I had no idea what I just said for the past 3 hours. And you do this every night. You have to be informed. Your listeners want that. But anyway, one last thing before I spin back to the serious things, which is, yeah, if any of you are either my Facebook friend, Daniel Fisher, or you want to be, go check it out. I enjoy when people join in on not only the reading of these things I do every day, and I'm writing 200 of them, folks. Every day I put out a 300 to 500 word essay on a movie that I haven't seen maybe in 40 years or 50 years. And what I try to do to keep it fresh, because it would get really old.
You go back and review it, though, before you write?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I do is the secret is, because I have a job now, and you know, part of my job is to not go on Facebook. You know, from the time I get there at 6 or 6:30 in the morning till the time I leave at around 4:30 or 5 in the afternoon, you know, part of my job is to not go on Facebook. I go on during my coffee break, or I'll go on during my lunch hour. But in general, they don't pay me to do any of that. So if I'm going to post this every day, I realize what I have to do is I have to stockpile as many as possible. So on the weekends, I'll look at what's on my list. I made a list, first of all, originally of 300 movies that I've loved, and I decided that's too much. So I cut it down to 200 movies I love, and I decided for the next 200 days, every day I'm going to post this 3 to 4 paragraph thing about a movie. And so it's like, if I'm going to do this, how am I going to not just put, it's really great, the cinematography is wonderful, the acting is wonderful, over and over and over. So what I try to do every day, and this again is, I on the weekends, I sit down and it's like, okay, well, this, I've got Cuckoo's Nest, I've got, you know, The Maltese Falcon, I've got St. Elmo's Fire. I've got three essays that I want to try to get done today. How the hell do I do this? So it's like, okay, how can I look at Cuckoo's Nest maybe in a different way?
So or maybe you, I'll talk you have, about... You like, have this worked I, out a lot more, and I think it probably speaks to your abilities as a properties master. You have this worked out a lot more systematically than I do as to, you know, you started out asking me questions. You know what you're doing. I think part of what informs me is that there's a serial nature to some of current events, but I don't know. It's a running gag here. You know, I say in the era of Trump, we all wake up every morning and wonder, hey, look, we're not all dead. And mm-hmm. you don't know what we are in the asylum, and we don't know what's gonna transpire. It's like that play Marat Sade. You know,
it's been a while. I did read it,
and it all takes place in the dungeon of a lunatic asylum. And
yes.
they're trying to put on a play about the trial of Jean-Paul Marat, or the murder of Jean, I don't remember the particulars, but it's being done by people, it's being done by people who are absolutely buffeted by their own madnesses. And
yeah,
so,
and by the way, the original title is not simply Marat Sade.
No,
right?
No, that like, I shortened it to Marat
like
Sade.
50, well, everybody does, because it's like 100 words. It's craziness. It's like, oh, mom, oh, dad, you're locked in the closet, and I'm feeling so sad.
Yeah, which is also, by the way, my favorite play title of all time. Poor mom, oh, dad, poor dad, mama's hung you in the closet, and I'm feeling so sad.
Thank you. I appreciate the correction. That is correct. 5 points for Bob.
Well, I pulled that out of memory. I can't do that with Marat Sade. But I do have it here. The persecution and assassination of Jean-Paul Marat as performed by the inmates of the asylum of Charenton under the direction of the Marquis de Sade.
Part two, Electric Boogaloo.
The adventure continues.
The adventure continues. I like calling anything Electric Boogaloo for a sequel. Because you know that one, right? Breaking Two, Electric Boogaloo.
Yes,
have you ever seen that?
Yes, I actually
have.
That's
not on my movies I've loved. I didn't love it, but it's an amusing movie.
I do have to interrupt here for a moment, and I don't want to steal your
thunder.
Oh, we're
going to interrupt and tangent like crazy.
Yeah. Just because it is one that I love, and I think it does hold up, at least it has thus far for me, is Local Hero anywhere on your list?
Yes, it is. It will be in the next 100. I've done 100 of these, folks, and you can go on my Facebook page, and I get no money from it. I'm just asking you out of vanity, sheer vanity, sheer pure ugly ego to say, you know, come look at what I do. And if you like, this is actually the thing. I love conversations about movies, and one reason I do it is what I was alluding to before, which is. Sometimes I just get I don't know about you, Bob, or all the listeners out there. I get frustrated. I feel weak. I feel it's not that it's hopeless. I mean, there is hope. And it's not like our time is the worst absolute time ever in the history of the United States. There have been terrible times throughout. You know, I remember as a child basically being told, well, the bomb could drop sometime or other. So we're going to teach you what to do in case the atomic bomb drops. Here, get under the desk. You know, so there have been times of terrible things throughout our nation's history, and not just to me. I mean, certainly, you know, the civil rights history and all. My wife is watching a show right now about the Reconstruction.
Hi, Helene.
So forth. Well, she doesn't hear you again because I keep the earbuds in.
No, I understand. I'm just filling. That's a box. I got it. You know. Yes.
No, it's good. And I listen. I thank you. I
and
should,
she
give
writes
my,
like well, an angel too.
Doesn't she though? Oh yeah, that's the thing too. My wife, if I should plug her a little bit too, Helene Fisher, H.E. Fisher. She is she's a poet and she's a published poet. God dang it, I can't remember the name of the journal. but she's been published in, like, real, honest to God, you could find it on the newsstand in airports, literary journals. And she's also starting to win some prizes and stuff. So she's a grad student in creative writing at City College. So, you know, yeah, we do some stuff around here.
Well, I have to share some of the love that you're getting here. Lady B writes in, Train in Vain, great fucking song. You and Dan are bosses, bro. Tupac is still alive. Signed, Another Precocious Child Who Read Too Damn Much, Lady B.
Thank you, Lady B.
And Rusty writes in and says, I'm one of those, I'm always on the ready to Google as a member of the Horn Research Department ad hoc, and adds, I love this guy, Bob. Jude in the Great Northwest says, being able to step back from it all is considered a healthy move. When I go out and stand quietly with the boots and flowers, Jude does that as a silent and heartfelt protest against our wars of choice. It provides a deep sense of solace, even though it is to remember the soldiers who've given their lives and for peace. So, and this is, you know, and in a way, this, what
your
we're doing.
Your listeners are really good writers. I'm sorry, you were complimenting me, but these guys can put together some sentences.
I got the most brilliant radio audience on planet Earth, okay? I just do. And that's one of the privileges of doing this. And part of the whole how do you, why do you, is that I get to engage in conversation, both written like this and telephonic, with people who have privileged my life with their knowledge and have changed my life. I've tried really, really hard over the course, I've tried hard over the course of my life to cultivate a better outlook, because I haven't always had it. And I get some of that vibe from you, too, especially given what you've been through. But
oh, and long before the surgery, trust me.
I came to this recognition that, as I alluded to before, I get, and I got it from Kurt Vonnegut. We've talked about our love for Vonnegut.
Yes.
The fact that I get to be a living, sentient being on the only planet, you know, I know the astrophysicists and the people who use 11% of their brains say, oh, you know, it's impossible that there isn't more intelligent life out there. Well, great. Nobody's proved that. What we know is that this planet supports conscious, sentient, reasonably occasionally intelligent life. And if I get to be part of that, there aren't any bad days.
There really aren't. There really aren't. Your worst day, you would give everything you had if the choice were to live it or not live it. I mean, to stop before it. Life is everything, and none of us really will know what comes after that. So, I mean,
I don't much care because this. I like this.
I'm sounding so self-helpy right now. You're so much better at this than me.
No, I'm really not, because I'm. You know, Kurt Vonnegut described it as the phenomenon of getting to be sitting up mud.
Huh. Well, what was that quote? I just quoted him the other day in one of my responses to somebody. He has a phenomenal quote where he says something. I'm going to just paraphrase, but imagine it where he said in one of his things, he says, I tell you, children, if there's anything you can do, I beg you to do this every day. Just say to yourself, if this isn't good, I don't know what is.
If this isn't nice, what is?
If this isn't nice, what is?
And
just appreciate the fuck out of everything, because always have that privilege.
Right, because there's a ton of Vonnegut out there that is suitable for tattooing on your forehead. Like, God damn it, babies, you've got to be kind.
That's it. God damn it, babies, you got to be kind. Yeah, that's right. And we are healthy only to the extent that our ideas are humane. This guy came up with more. He could put out his own Bible if he would have lived long enough.
Well, he did invent a religion. It's called, remember, Baconianism?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
nice, right. Nice, very nice. So many interesting creatures all in the same device.
Woo!
Yeah. And by the way,
and how does that relate to Billy Don't Be a Hero and the Frosted Lucky Charms elf? I don't know.
But it's you're not supposed to. Because if you start working on that, and this is my problem, then you're probably involved in searching for wompeters or FOMA, and you may possibly find yourself in a grand falloon.
So going back to the Facebook thing I do, which is that what you were talking about, reaching out to your audiences and how that gives your life meaning. And I've discovered that too, in that, you know, when I first joined Facebook, which Facebook will tell me these things every once in a while, like your friendversary with your sister is 9 years. And I'm like, well, I've kind of loved my sister long before that, but I guess that's cool. But when I first joined Facebook, like a lot of people, I was like, oh, we can use this to save the world. We can communicate to one another and change each other's minds and affect each other's ideals. And just by communicating, we're gonna be a better culture. And I realize now, boy, was that a crock of shit. I think in a lot of ways, you know, I have a lot of friends.
Welcome to social media. We're going to use this to tear the world into tiny pieces and see if we can't get a little closer to that apocalypse.
There's no way in hell that Trump would have been president without the internet. Not even just his tweets.
No, not just without the internet, but without the granular ability of Facebook to weaponize data.
Well, there's weaponizing data, but there's also, and I talked about this the last time I was on with you. Truth is no longer truth. Science is no longer science.
Hi, anti-vaxxers.
Science is opinion now. Yeah. Oh God, I'm in one of the hot spots for the measles.
Well, I've been worrying about you.
Rockland County, and there are different speculations as to why we are. I don't want to speculate without knowledge, but
some of it is within
Rockland County that for religious reasons do not believe in vaccinations.
Yeah.
And so this seems to be a great cause of it. And I am in a county which declared an emergency. And for any newcomers, I've done this show once a month, I think for the past 7 months now. I think this is, or at least this might be my sixth appearance. But in case people don't know, 7 months ago, I had heart transplant surgery. I have been living with heart issues for about a decade. And finally, it got to the point where the doctor said, we're going to put you on the list. And a surprisingly quick amount of time, 9 months, I went from living on a heart pump, a portable heart pump that I wore like a detective's holster with batteries, to having somebody's heart, a dead person's heart, put into my body.
Measles.
Trying to give a little background to that. Measles. So measles could effing kill me. Anybody, and I've tried online or on Facebook to argue this with people. It's like, I don't believe in vaccine. You know,
because Bobby Kennedy said mercury.
Yeah, or whatever that British scientist who was discredited, or Jenny McCarthy for that matter too. But it's like, you got to realize something. It's like personal choice. Yeah, but your personal choice can kill lots of people around me.
Right. What the hell ever happened to your rights end where my nose begins?
I want the right to survive. I want the right to not die because you believe Jenny McCarthy more than scientists.
Well, let me ask you a hard science question, and that is this. I presume, because you had good parents, that you were vaccinated as a kid.
Oh, hell yeah.
Have you and your obviously very, very good physician talked about the fact that the measles vaccine is thought not to be fully effective for people who got the one-and-done vaccine, and that goes up to about 1984?
I wish I could tell you, yes, we've had thorough conversations about this.
Put this on your list, please.
But the answer is, we've not. Okay. We've had very general discussions about, you know, avoiding certain situations and what to do. You know, I am back to work, and as I've told, as I've said before, I wear a mask at work because I'm in a pretty dusty environment. I'm in an environment where we're just 50 yards away from me. There are carpenters building sets with their power saws and throwing all kinds of stuff up into the air. And right next to me, there's painters, scenic painters, with their stuff, with all kinds of fumes and so forth. And I'm in a building which who knows how many decades has gone by without any kind of cleaning, and there's these big steel beams over my head. Who knows how many decades worth of all kinds of creepy crawly things are up there. Anyway, I wear a mask, and sometimes I even wear gloves because infections can kill me. I am still on medication, which has to keep my immunity on purpose down. And that is so that my body will not reject my heart.
But Pill Mountain is getting smaller, right?
Pill Mountain gets smaller, but I still do blood tests every month. And sometimes the numbers go up or down. And sometimes the pills will go down a little. And then sometimes we've got to bring it up a little bit because the number is not what we want it to be. So I'll never be out of the woods. I move a little closer to the edge of the woods usually. But sometimes I take a little step back here and there. And by the way, too, you mentioned it. Let's just get that out of the way. I'm allowed to talk about what job I'm on now because it's an Apple TV show, and they had their big press conference to announce all their shows on their streaming network. My show is called Dream. It might be called Little America instead, but for now the working title is Dream. And what it is, it's an anthology show. 8 episodes, each one takes a different character from a different nationality and does a story either to do with them adapting to life in America as immigrants or it could be any old story, but it happens to be about an Iranian family or a French woman or Japanese. Every episode is totally different people, totally different sets, and we do all of this on location. So I'm in the set dressing department. So every episode we have to start all over again in terms of the furniture and the set elements we use for a single episode. A lot of on TV, when I did Law and Order, we had standing sets. We had the squad room set. That was a built set, and that stayed the same pretty much for, you know, however 20-something years. We had the courtroom. And we would change things around in little ways, but the basic structure of the courtroom was always the same. We had a jail. We had certain built sets.
An interrogation room.
Yeah, and we knew, especially, it's like, oh, there's a bad snowstorm out today. Well, we're going to film inside today. We're going to go into the courtroom instead of the street shots we were going to do. But now on this show that I'm doing, there are no standing sets because there are no regular characters. Every episode is a different set of characters, different houses, different interiors, different places they work. So we're telling these stories, and I think it's a really great idea. And I think it not only brings diversity of skin color, but it brings diversity of experience. And I expected it to be more cultural, noble.
Yeah, cultural milieu.
Yeah, and you know, what's one of the big hot topics, for better or worse, it's immigration. And of course, immigration by a certain team is presented only in the negative. They're all trying to get over there with the drugs, and they all want to come up to wherever you live, and they all want to kill you. They all want to leech off you.
Yeah, they want to eat you.
They either want to take your jobs or go on welfare. I don't know how you do both at the same time, but somehow or other.
But you're not inscrutable like they are, Dan.
Yeah, I know. I don't go on the internet enough, I guess. So that's the show. I don't know when it's coming out. I don't know if it's going to be called Dream or Little America or something else. You never know these things until it just happens. But I think it's going to be good, and I'm grateful that it has given me employment. I got a couple more weeks on it, and then I'll jump hopefully to something else. I want to keep working and working and working. I got 10 more years of this, folks, before I can retire and discover the joys of golf or fishing or grandchildren, I guess. Although, you know, I got to stop. I got to tell you something funny, which is that I have sworn since I got together with Helene, which was probably about 30 years ago, I shared with her my secret, which is that on my 65th birthday, I want to try acid. I've never done acid. I've never done mushrooms. I've never done any of that stuff.
Start with
the
mushrooms.
I've smoked pot a couple of times. That's what everybody tells me.
Low dose.
I just want to do the. I want to do the John Lennon experience. You know, I want to expand my consciousness or make myself go batshit insane. But by the time I'm 65, you know, most of the big stuff will be done. So this is just a goal. Everybody has to have their goals. That's mine. Instead of a cake, Just get me a tab with a little smiling emoji on it, or whatever those freaks do. I want to give it a try.
There is a downside
Danny
to mushrooms.
Wants to take a trip.
There's a downside to mushrooms. They taste like shit, you know, because they grow in it.
Well, that's the thing. I'm a picky eater. I don't like mushrooms on pizza. I don't know if I want to.
Well, there went that idea.
I've seen the Jack Nicholson movies that were made in the 1960s. I know that it might not be necessarily the most wonderful thing. That might be a very bad thing. I might wind up vomiting all over myself. But I haven't done it. And I know I have all kinds of friends that have done all kinds of things that I've never done. But this is the one thing that I think I could do. And I think I could survive it.
I don't want to kill myself. You'll survive. You'll survive.
I figure.
But the nice thing, as compared, you know, your three big hallucinogens, acid, mushrooms, and peyote. Acid, you can't always be sure about sourcing. And so, you know, it can be sketchy in how it's made and provided. And it can lie, not talking about bad trip, man. I'm talking about how you feel the next day. Can be kind of icky. Peyote, you have to vomit your brains out before the trip starts.
I don't think I want that.
Mushrooms, they just taste bad.
What's the experience? What's it like on mushrooms, Uncle Bob?
Well, kids.
Well, Dan, let me tell you, son. It's hallucinogenic, but you know, you've got a few thousand years of people's experience, you know, kind of behind you, and you'll see things, hear things, depending on, and it's all dose dependent. You know, low dose, you might get a little, you know, a little paisley sky. High dose, you know, walls are going to breathe. But that's okay, and it's all about being in the right state of mind. If you walk through the door and say, I've had one shitty day, God damn it, yeah, give me the hallucinogens, that's not going to work well.
You going to have a bad trip, dude?
Yeah. Again, movies we have loved. Cool Hand Luke, you have got to get your mind right. So,
there you go.
Right. I got to share a little more mail with you.
Oh, okay.
Robert in Australia writes, talking about the anti-vaxxers.
Australia?
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Are there any religions that don't believe in parachutes when skydiving? Drawing an obvious parallel with, you know, anti-vaxxers.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. They tend to accept gravity. Like many religions, I guess one could say that it is selective beliefs, right? We believe the stuff in Leviticus about the homosexuality, but we don't believe the stuff in Leviticus about tattoos or mixing fabrics. So we pick and choose. So I would imagine that's a pick and choose situation, Mr. Australia. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
serious.
Robert. That's Robert.
Robert. Yeah. Sorry, Robert. I go to those places. I just insulted you.
No, you didn't. You didn't call him Tim Apple. Okay. You didn't call him Robert Australia.
And I won't do any of the stupid Crocodile Dundee jokes.
Nah, that's my job.
Okay. But
I'm forgiven. I have a dispensation.
Anyway, kids, this has been a public service announcement from your Uncle Bob. Remember, always know your dealer.
Exactly. And when they say, hey, kid, the first one's free, it never is, because they'll backload it on the price when you start paying. Right.
Okay,
Bill,
now I am going to confess.
Yes.
Before we get to Bill, I don't know. I'm sure you remember this. But I used to I've tried marijuana a few times. I don't really care for it. I haven't smoked it in a long, 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 long time.
Yes, I remember I remember that time you were sitting on the bench in the Creative Arts Center rubbing the marijuanas into the crook of your arm. I remember it well. I said, do it, Dan. Don't do it.
Well, but it might be a shock to your listeners to know that there were a few times where Bob Kincaid and I partook of some illegally smoked substances. And you would always say at one point, as if it were the most hilarious thing, and you'd never said it before, you'd always look at me and you'd go, why do you think they call it dope?
Actually, that was Mike Gillum.
Really?
Yes.
I thought it was you in that inimitable Orson Wellesian kind of voice, but it's funny what the mind does.
Well, we were all sort of interchangeable at that time.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't smoke more pot, because I'm having a hard enough time keeping track of my memory as it is. And they say it's not particularly good for you. Then again, they used to say that it led to the harder stuff. So I don't know.
Well, you know, look, obviously there was beer involved, so I think it did.
But this is the frivolous episode, it seems to be. We're trying real hard. We've talked about all kinds of fun things. You know, I don't know if you got any complaints. And Bill, if you're waiting to hear your email read, it will be in a minute. I don't know if you got any complaints from the last time I was on about, God, you guys were so serious. It was all we did a special health episode because there happened to be a bunch of health stuff in the news. And it was the 6-month anniversary of my transplant. So we kind of stayed on the straight and narrow. Today, all hell is breaking loose. We're talking mushrooms. We're talking Mr. Jaws. And the reason for me wanting to be a little bit silly tonight is honestly I'm frustrated, and I think a lot of people share this frustration, and some, you know, we have a year and something before the elections, right? So right off the bat, we got how many, do you know for a fact how many Democratic candidates have declared? We had a guy, not only Biden, we had a guy the other day I'd never heard of before. Wortham, Weatherer, I don't know. I think there are at least 38 Democratic candidates for president. I kid you not. It's in the 30s. And so I'm starting now to read, to get a little more involved, a little more serious, but I know that I've got a year and some months before I pick who I want to be the Democratic candidate. It's no secret who I want to pick for the general election, but I don't know who I want to be the Democrat. So it's hard for me to get real ramped up in the political news right now.
I got sucked into that bullshit in 2015, and I swore I'd never do it again. And there were only two Democratic, well, okay, three at one point. I was right about a whole lot of stuff. I predicted Trump's victory way ahead of a lot of people. Way ahead of people who are going, no, she got this. I was like, you're kidding, right? But I too am sitting back. And I don't know when New York's primary is, but West Virginia's will be in May. So whatever's going to happen, it will be all over but the shouting and the balloon drop by the time I even get a primary choice.
We know that West Virginia is going to go red.
There's still going to be a
Democratic candidate. Is
there's still going to be a Democratic primary?
It's not going to take West Virginia.
No.
There has to be, but don't expect a lot of visits from Bernie or Elizabeth or Kamala, whoever gets it. Don't expect them to waste a lot of time in West Virginia. You know, maybe a hi, how are you to the supporters. But they're not going to be barnstorming for those. How many electoral votes is it? Three or five?
Five.
They're not going to spend a lot of time there because they also know it's Trump. Trump goes there a lot because they like the Love Me rallies there. He gets a good crowd at the Love Me rallies. So, but yeah, I it's not that I'm giving up. I don't want to feel like, well,
no,
you know, I don't
no,
want to
no,
be
no.
that person.
Take
and I don't
it all
want to be that
in.
Person. It's like you could have. You know, what did you do when things were going bad, Daddy? Well, I sat at my computer and I checked my likes on Facebook. No, I want to be involved. But at the same time, if all I do, I mean, I have friends that post on Facebook 12, 13 times a day about, you know, Trump's an idiot, or can you believe that, you know, this happened and that happened? It's like, you got to relax a little bit. You know, first of all, I learned when I joined Facebook, after the first couple of months, I'm not changing anybody's minds. I learned the hard way that every once in a while somebody will post something that's just demonstrably false, and I will try. I can't help it. I get suckered into it. I'll do a counter argument. I'll provide facts and lists and links, here's a video showing that Trump said the thing you're saying he never said. Here's a video. And of course, they're not going to click the video. They don't want that reality shattered. And even if they were to see it, they'll say, well, you know, they took out the context. If they had just kept it rolling in the minute before, you would have heard him say that he didn't mean any of that. You can't win is the point. You can't. Don't worry about there's a third of the country that will never vote for Trump. There's a third of the country that will vote for Trump no matter what.
And no one else.
There's that third that either doesn't vote at all, or they may go either way, depending on their mood. I had a Bernie friend that voted for fucking Trump because
there were lots of burners who did.
I don't want to fight with burners tonight. I'm warming up to Bernie a little bit more, at least in terms of what he's saying and his ideas and the fact that he does take stands. You know, I'll start to like a candidate, and then they do or say something that either disappoints me or I disagree with. You know, there's so many issues that I wonder, like, is it even – does it matter? Does it not matter? Is it something that I should put my passion into, or is it just a distraction? You know, felons voting, should we impeach? Should we not impeach? Does it even – you know, if we bring these charges, do we have a chance in hell of actually winning? Probably not. So is it really worth it to put in this effort? Is Trump just going to weaponize that to make us, you know, oh, look, they keep coming after me. You know, I won and they're still trying to. Yeah. And there's, you know, in Saudi Arabia, as you talked about, horrible things are happening. In Sri Lanka over the weekend, horrible things happen. But you still, you know, Sri Lanka just is not as sexy as Notre Dame burning, you know, that people
it's don't pay attention. Well, it's not nearly wide enough.
I guess so. Well, but also you get in. It's the white thing, but it's also, you know, it's Catholic. There are a lot of Catholics. That's a very important symbol to them. And so it's like, you know, you see the word tragedy, and you see that billion dollar GoFundMe pages to help the Catholic Church rebuild, and the Catholic Church has more money than God, so to speak.
And meanwhile, there are three little historically black churches in Louisiana that are struggling to rebuild after they were burnt to the ground by a Trump supporter.
Yeah, that's right. And Flint, Michigan still doesn't have clean water. And Puerto Rico still has not recovered from the hurricane. And Trump is picking fights with them and claiming he gave them $90 billion when he didn't. And it isn't his money. And P.S. Puerto Rico is, you know, the citizens are United States citizens. So it's not a foreign country as much as he likes to characterize Puerto Rico. Anyway, I'm mad about all these things, Bob, but there are things I can do and there are things I cannot do. And
you are describing the eternal conundrum of what is talked about in nonprofit circles as capacity. And we can only...
I guess so.
You know, we can only do as much as we can do, and I'm not going to sit here and jam the crown of thorns on your head and send you toward Golgotha because you haven't declared yourself an undying partisan for one candidate or another. I think anybody who does that is a goddamn fool at this point, because the only partisanship we need is that whoever is the nominee will get our vote, because the house is on fire and the guy throwing the buckets full of gasoline into the flames is in the White House right now, and you've got to stop the guy throwing the bucket loads of gasoline onto the fire before you can start talking about anything else. So I too, Dan, am sitting back and waiting and watching. I'm developing a preference list, but I'm not. I do not, and will not have a candidate that I'm just going to throw down and go all in for. Okay, I got a couple that I wouldn't pee on if they were on fire. But you know what? If for some reason the Tralfamadorians come down and make that person the nominee, I'm fucking voting for him.
Yeah, well, to stretch your analogy, too, about the gasoline and the fire and throwing water on it, you can't always argue about, is this water pure enough? Are we sure that this
Precisely.
Is the right water? It's water, folks. We need water. But, Yeah, and listen, Bob, you did something really great, which is you showed recently that it isn't just about either voting, which is great, you got to vote, but you went beyond that, and you didn't just go on Facebook and whine or Twitter and whine. You don't just worry about things and read the news and do nothing. You went to the state capitol, and you got yourself behind something you believed in that can have a direct impact of the people around you.
Yeah, the nation's capital even. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think politics belongs to all of us. Politics isn't just what happens in Washington or even in our own state capitals. Politics happens right in our homes every day. It happens with the way we treat people around us in a work situation, on the highway as we're driving. We've got to treat each other. What is it Vonnegut said? You know, you've got to be kind. You have to treat each other with humanity. This is politics. If we do this, we're not being weak. There's a thing with the Trump people where they really love this idea of Trump is not a pussy. I'm for Trump because he's not a pussy. He won't let other countries push us around. And there's this real sort of macho, I'm a fighter, I'm not a pussy, I'm not a baby, I'm not a coward, I'm not a weakling. That's why I like Trump, because he stands up for himself. We have a president that acts like a character in the worldwide wrestling shows, you know.
Which is where he got his start. God.
Yeah.
I'm going to kick, you know, Australia's ass.
Hey, by the way, let's not forget Bill. Bill did send an email.
Yes, long time ago. Bill did. And
let's hear from Bill.
Subject line, duck and cover. I remember when Lewis
duck
Black.
And cover. Right. I know the song.
Yeah. I remember when Lewis Black called the duck and cover protocol a fire fuck bomb. That's what he called it, signed Bill in Pennsylvania, Stan. Meanwhile, Earther is out there screaming, the theory of gravity is a lie. Intelligent falling is the truth. Also, cookies lead to milk, leads to beer, leads to pot, leads to Quaaludes, leads to PCP, licking frogs, meth, and then you're shooting heroin into your eyes.
Somebody studied sarcasm in college, I can tell.
I think that's an advanced degree.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. This is actually why I started the Movies I Have Loved daily thing, is that I just decided, you know what, I'm done arguing politics online. Every once in a while I'll dip my toe in it because I feel I have to, because I feel like if I don't say something in my own way, I'm agreeing with just the most horrendous things I've ever seen in my life. And you have to really get far out there, because what I do know is once I go there, it's going to occupy at least an hour of my day. Because it becomes a game of attrition. Whoever gets the last paragraph in the threads, quote unquote, wins. And that's really what it's about these days. We've become a culture of winning instead of listening. And the thing is that I don't really want to listen to neo-Nazis. And I don't really ever want to give them such credence that I'm, you know, giving anything they say consideration. But I don't know. I guess I kind of have to at least listen if I'm to then counter argue. I can't create straw men, and I can't oversimplify the why people become Trump fans. You know, I think it's very easy for us all to go, well, it's, you know, I love Trump because you da 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 da. But I know people who have something of an education who, for whatever reason, voted for the guy. I have an aunt and an uncle who are longtime Fox News loving conservative, you know, way back since the Nixon administration, voted straight Republican. And, you know, I love them as family members, but I don't think I could stand to be in a – I haven't been in a room with them in a long time because I don't want to hear it. But on the other hand, you know, where is the line of, well, you got to listen to people versus you know, not listen, covering your ears and going, la, 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 don't hear you. You know, and I just see people just wanting to win and own and beat. And nobody wants to understand or listen or just play around with an idea. I can't play around with neo-Nazism, and I don't espouse that. Don't get me wrong. I don't know. We just, the whole thing is, look, the country's so polarized. It always has been polarized. We just never knew to the extent until people were given a voice online. I never knew that some of my friends were such racists. The people I grew up with are such racists, or people in New York City that I work with are, you know, are such horrible
people.
And
I guess that's the silver lining. At least the terms of the struggle are better defined now. And that's a hell of an easy thing for a guy that's positively shiny with white privilege to say. When little black kids are being thrown on the ground and having knees put in their heads for absolutely nothing by police officers, when you've got armed gangs of vigilante thugs assaulting migrants in the middle of the New Mexico desert and holding them at gunpoint, If I find out that you align, if I've known you for a while and I find out that you align with Trump and that you endorse, you know, this notion that there are very fine Nazis.
Yeah.
I've at least learned something valuable, and I'm probably going to adjust my interactions.
Yeah. It's something how people are like, well, I can't wait till he's out of office. Hopefully soon, hopefully by 2020. But the thing is that the effects of Trump will be here forever because he's shown how effective it is. I really believe that American politics is forever changed. The toothpaste is out of the tube. We can't go back to the way things were. And if you even look at, like, you know, we used to be shocked that the whole Willie Horton ads, and we used to be shocked when, look how dirty the campaigns have gotten, and mudslinging. I mean, it looks like the friggin' Puritans now compared to what it is. And that was only like, you know, 8 or 12 or 16 years ago that we were lamenting how much lower could we go? Well, we know now that it could go a hell of a lot lower.
Yeah,
and
stop
you don't
asking.
Think it's gonna stop. You don't think it's going to stop with this because it works. There are certain people that want to hear that stuff. I mean, Reagan used to say America is strong again. You know, we're proud now. We weren't proud before. There's something that's very appealing, obviously, to people.
It's morning in America, Nancy.
Well, yeah, it's a morning in America. People wanted to hear it was a morning in America. People wanted to hear something positive because, you know, I think one of the problems with Carter was that he was saying, you know what, things are hard right now, folks, and I'm doing the best I can.
Right, tell me lies that are going to make me feel good.
People want to feel good, and people want to feel strong, and even you know, those guys in the gym that take the steroids and pump up, they want to feel stronger. They don't feel they're strong enough. No matter what they do, they're not strong enough, and people are afraid, you know, and you see at the Love Me rallies, where you'll see women interviewed and they're like, well, I don't want, you know, illegal immigrants breaking into my house. It's like, lady, you live in Iowa. I don't know if you really got to worry a lot about that. But she worries about it. She's afraid. And so she wants to feel safe and protected. I understand that. I understand being afraid and wanting to feel secure. It's a shame you have to blame people who don't look like you or don't act like you for that. Oh, you know, I'm afraid the gays are going to try to turn my kids gay, or that they're all pedophiles, or that, you know,
and it's utterly lost on them.
Gay.
Marvelline, you know, if somebody turns your kid gay, the kid was gay before they got turned. There's no such thing as turning.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But I wonder too, by the way, I wonder how the sanctity of marriage is going now that gays get to be married. Or is marriage any less sanctimonious than it had previously been? Seems about the same to me. I don't know, but anecdotally speaking,
you're a happily married heterosexual male, but the minute gay marriage became legal in New York, you can't tell me that you didn't think about running off with some guy. The preachers wouldn't lie to us, would they?
No, maybe I'm thinking about it right now. You know, maybe I'm thinking about going down to...
maybe that's what happens when you drop acid when you turn 65, Dan.
Yeah, I've tried the first 55 years heterosexual loose to say, let's try something different with my life. You know, I got maybe 20, maybe 40 more years of this to go. So let's strap on some leather and go down to the Anvil Club in New York City. I'm only about 35 miles away from it. Let's do it, baby.
Yeah, what does it say that you know how far you are from the Anvil Club, Dan?
Well, I went to the Anvil Club once inadvertently when I was when I was at WVU. In fact,
strictly by accident. Yes,
strictly by accident. Here's the story. I was at WVU, and while the other kids were going to spring break down in Florida, I of course wanted to go to Big Bad New York City to check out all the dirt and filth. And so I had a few other friends go with me who also were interested in dirt and filth. And so I got a room at the YMCA for like $20 a night. And, you know, at night we'd just go around and try to see what Sodom and Gomorrah was really like. And one night my friends and I were just walking around the East Village or West Village, I can't remember. And we just asked a passerby on the street, like, what's a good club to go to? Because we'd heard about the New York club scene in the 80s. So we thought we'd give that a try. And he said with a straight face, oh, the hottest club in town is called the Anvil. So we're like, great. And so, oh, it's two blocks and make a left. And tell them I sent you. And we go to this place called the Anvil, and it's down in a basement. And it's like the movie Cruising with Al Pacino. I go in, and it was all these men. It's all men, and they've got the mustaches, and they look like, you know, Freddie Mercury with the sunglasses, or the guy from the Village People, the cop or something, or this construction guy. And I'm like, oh, this is not just any old club. This is a very specific club.
I may be from West Virginia, but
yeah, and it's not that I got freaked out, but I know that there wasn't much purpose me hanging around. So, you know, we left after a drink. And then later on, when I moved to New York City, in fact, I became good friends with a raging alcoholic. And I won't give his name because he's still around. But this raging alcoholic and I would go out and be drunk together at night. And he liked to just not go to sleep until the sun came up. That was his thing. 2 a.m. was just fine for me to head home. That's when he really wanted to get started. And so he was that friend that would make you do the things that you wouldn't ordinarily do. And maybe it was stupid as hell, but you did it. And you're glad you did it now that you survived and you could look back.
The id as wingman.
Yeah, exactly. So we would go to gay bars because when the other places would close at 2 a.m, gay bars would stay open all night long and nobody stopped. So that's where we would go for free drink, or not free drinks, but cheap drinks that we could drink until 6 a.m. And all we did, we just pretended to be a couple. We didn't frill it up and get all gross about it. We were just two guys together at a table having drinks. And so that's what we did. And of course, I knew plenty of gay people being a theater major. It's what they did. And I almost felt embarrassed sometimes being a heterosexual in the theater department, because I was heterosexual, but I wasn't one of those Sam Shepard, David Mamet actors. Like, we did have heterosexual actors in the theater department that were very proud to be not gay. And they're like, I'm going to do this monologue from David Mamet where I say fuck every other word because I'm straight.
Good for you.
Like, well, yeah. I was just like,
your mother must be so proud.
You know, I like to have sex with girls whenever they want to have sex with me, which wasn't so often, but every once in a while. But I envied the gay friends I had were very good dancers and had really great taste in music, and also just were the funniest people I knew. You know, there's nothing like that gay, you know, sense of humor, a catty sense of humor, and I'm being homophobic just putting it that way. But I don't know how else to
But I don't think it's in the intent.
No, I'm stereotyping, but I'm doing it with love. So I get to go to heaven after all. So anyway, this had a point to it. I love the gays. That's my point. I love the gays.
Some of my best friends.
And if I offended anybody out there, I'm sorry if I offended you.
Ah, the great Republican non-apology apology.
Yeah, the non-apology. Well, everybody, I've heard that all over the place. Basically, whenever there's an online argument going on about something or other, it doesn't even have to be political. It can be about movies or music or sports. Inevitably, somebody will say, well, geez, sorry I offended you. And it's really become a weaponized word. I try not to use it now at all, the word offend or offense, because it's just now it's basically saying fuck you. It's really what it is. In polite, it's a polite fuck you. Sorry if I offended you. So that's my tip for the day, kids. Don't use that word.
Understood.
I'd rather you say fuck you to me than say I'm sorry I offended. Because at least if you say fuck you to me, I know where you stand.
Right.
I know that it's I pissed you
kinda,
off.
It's kind of like what that Trump sticker means on the rusted out 78 Caprice with the rusty bumper. It tells pretty much everything you. I mean, I hate to just reduce people to a bumper sticker, but if the bumper sticker had a swastika on it, would you go any further wondering about who they were past the swastika? Welcome to the Trump bumper sticker. That's just where I am.
Yeah. Well, and back to one more time, speaking about the movies I have loved, I texted you, or I am'd you this morning, because I'm getting to be a regular enough on this thing that I actually start to put thought into, like, well, you know, I'm going to be on next week. Like, you know, what kind of stuff do I want to talk about? Or do I want to be serious? Do I want to be funny? Do I want to just let it flow and be what it is, which is usually what it winds up being? But I am'd you this morning. Do you mind if I read what I sent
you?
No,
not at all. Not at all.
Okay. This is what I it's like 7:30.
I'll open mine and we'll
I
read together.
Yeah. Well, I said, my mind keeps looping back to another 70s movie, Network, and Howard Beale's Mad as Hell speech, but more the stuff that precedes the Mad as Hell speech, where he says this, I don't have to tell you how bad it is out there. It is bad out there, and sometimes fighting it, well, this is where I come in, sometimes fighting it feels like picking a fight with ocean waves. They just keep coming and coming. I'm going to interrupt myself a second and say that's how I feel now. I feel like when I go at it with somebody over this ideological stuff, I'm just fighting the ocean, and I know I'm just trying to smack down on those waves, and the waves just keep coming and coming, and I just feel like I have to do it anyway. Anyway, the remainder of the IM says this, a 400-page report, that which has not been redacted, is boiled down to he didn't do it, and that becomes given fact by the spinners and repeaters. We know what science is and what it can do for us, but science has now become an opinion, and diseases that were once all but eradicated have returned with a vengeance. Social media, which lets us shop without leaving the house, share cat pictures, and jerk off to porn, has changed our culture in immeasurably terrible ways as well, but the toothpaste ain't going back in the tube. So I'm not sure if the answer is to just keep punching the ocean or if there's a way to fight and laugh at the same time. Is frivolity a necessity? I don't want to bum listeners out, but I don't want to be accused of gleefully ignoring the icebergs drifting right in front of us. That's what I wrote you this morning. And that's the way I feel.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell to do, Bob. I don't think that opening up the window and yelling I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take anymore does anything, but in a way it makes us feel better, right? It makes us, we haven't accomplished anything by doing it other than not taking it anymore. We're to just at least express ourselves to say, you know what, fuck this shit.
And I try on this program, Dan, to provide a space, anybody can call. I mean, we have a Republican ban here for a good reason. There's like 1,000 hours of right-wing radio broadcasting, what have you.
That's right.
To every hour of liberal progressive broadcasting. So they really have nothing to say here. And mostly it boils down to, you know, booger eater, you know, libtard.
Libtard,
and
yeah.
And so who's got time for that?
Snowflake.
Right. But I try to provide at the risk of making a mockery, a safe space to actually talk about things that matter to us and to process toward a way forward, because we are the antithesis of the way the right wing operates. We do process where they follow orders. They're authoritarians. We're not. They don't question. We do question.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of the operating philosophy here. But at the same time, to use your water metaphor, because we keep that's one of the lovely things about this. We play with each other's metaphors. Don't tell people.
It's our little secret.
Yes. But There's that old line about if you sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy will float by.
That's good.
And sometimes you and it dovetails with that old Zen maxim, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. There are some things that you just have to do, and then there are some times that you just have to be still. And, for instance, what we were talking about with the plethora of Democratic presidential candidates right now, I'm in sitting still phase. Because there's nothing to be had by me beating my chest and shrieking that everyone must become completely devoted to this or that candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, with regard to the Biden announcement today, I confess I have a case of the galloping meh.
Me too.
But
4 years ago, he would have been my guy.
Yeah, but
hands down.
But November 2020, if he's the nominee, I'm a Biden guy.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because again, with the guy throwing the gasoline on the houses and lighting them on fire, right? But I'm not. Like I said, I'm not gonna. I'm just not gonna sit there and declare that anybody is the second coming of anything, because I'm old enough to know that that's just not goddamn true. And yeah. Anybody who becomes a true believer in anything has left a certain amount of reason behind. If you
zealots.
Say,
yeah, go ahead.
Right.
I'm sorry.
If you say I will only vote for this candidate if they're the nominee and no one else, then you are by definition part of the problem. And nowhere near being part of the solution.
Here is one thing in favor of that kind of train of thought, which is definitely not my train of thought. There is something very effective about that. It's why Republicanism is so appealing. They don't bother a whole hell of a lot with nuance, and they have proven that lack of nuance can be very successful. It's like, this is right. You know, immigrants are bad. You know, climate change is a hoax. There are very definite, absolute, defined borders, and that can be very appealing. Again, in this age of not always being certain of things, or feeling insecure, feeling unprotected. You know, there's all the stuff about the neglected blue collar worker. I mean, that's a bunch of nonsense. Blue collar workers, I don't even know how many of them necessarily are these days. Industry is changing so much. But we're all afraid of something. We're all angry about something or other. Especially with Trump, for some time, it's if you boil it down and make it simple and don't put a lot of nuance. I mean, how many people just jumped on the Mueller report with, well, no collusion, that's it. This is all a big waste of time. Well, you're overlooking all those convictions and all of the criminals that are still going through the process.
And you're actually overlooking the words that were printed that we got to read.
Yeah, that's right. And they weren't just anybody. He was like his campaign manager and his personal lawyer. These weren't just guys, doing the Xeroxing down the hall. These were integral people. But also too, you know, if you just boil it down to no collusion, that's it. Don't look any further. Yeah, and you overlook the fact that I don't know what percentage of it is marked out in black ink or different color ink. You're also overlooking the stuff about, well, you know, this really was what Mueller says is I can't say it definitely is prosecutable for obstruction of justice. On the other hand, I'm not saying that. Interpret it as you will. And the fact is that the president never did actually give, he gave written testimony, which basically said over and over again, I don't remember if I ever did that. I don't remember if I ever did this or that. Those were pretty much his written answers to everything. He didn't testify live, and his attorneys even said,
right,
well, it's a perjury. They called it a perjury trap. Like, wait a minute.
Which is a confession that the man cannot help lying. And I see there's a level of cognitive dissonance in being a maggot that I can't break through to, because on the one hand, I've got the very best words and I've got a great brain, and then I can't remember.
Right.
I don't recall.
But the big point too, Bob, is that, you know, I think I don't want to push too hard down on the Bernie on the Bernies and the Bernie Bros. I'm mad as hell that there were a number of them that did not support our Democratic candidate in 2016 because they felt betrayed. I understand that they felt betrayed. I'm not sure if I buy all of the supposed proof
right,
that they were.
Well, I don't. But
the
you
outcome
can't.
Would have been any different. There's no denying that the Democratic Party and the organization itself threw its weight behind Hillary because Hillary had always thrown her weight behind it. You know. Now, on the other hand, more people voted for Hillary in the primaries than they voted for Bernie. That's just numbers, and the numbers are fact, which is why I never bought the whole thing of like, well, if Bernie had been nominated, he would have definitely wiped out Trump. No, he would not definitely. We thought until.
But if you will permit me the interruption and
please,
pardon it, please. You are entering dangerous territory, Dan.
I know. And
you don't want to, but you're. You are doing something that is very easy to do that I only mention it because I try so
please.
Hard not to, and that is to relitigate 2016. Let the dead past bury its dead.
Right. Well, I just don't want a repeat of what this is. If anybody is a Bernie person right now.
Oh, there's lots of them.
I'm sure of it. And it's not that I don't support Bernie or won't support Bernie. Even in the primaries, I might still vote for Bernie. I don't know yet. There are ideas that initially when I heard him, I did not agree
There's
with.
Only one bottom line. If Bernie's the nominee of the Democratic Party, I'm voting for Bernie in November 2020.
But listen, my mind changes. My mind changes all the time. Like one week, Kamala will say something that just sounds great. And then I get... You know, I read articles about her past or you know, her answer to this or that is a little wishy-washy, you know, or Mayor Pete, he looks great. He's got this image, da-da-da-da-da. On the other hand, does he have substance? I think Warren has a hell of a lot of substance, but is she just Hillary part two in terms of image?
I'm not nearly as bothered by that as the fact that I know.
I just don't want to lose again.
I already know what the shape of 2020 is going to be because I lived through 2016. Mm-hmm. Whoever it is that's the nominee is going to be subjected to the same scummy, lowest common denominator politicking that there is. So we know this. Whatever great ideas Elizabeth Warren puts forward is going to be met with Pocahontas. Okay? Let me just walk through a few of these.
Okay. I'm sorry.
If it's Pete Buttigieg, it's going to be dog horn, not whistles, dog horns to the evangelicals. He's gay. Do you know what they do? Even though Trump has a history of actually not being horrible to gay people, but he will now because it's all a zero-sum game. It's Machiavellianism written with it's the prince written with a fucking crayon. If it's Kamala Harris, it's all going to be race and gender. Right.
If Trump had a theme song, really, what should play at his rallies instead of some Prince song or Eagles song? It really should be. There's a song in the musical Chicago called "All I Really Want Is Love," and that's really what Trump wants. He loves those rallies. He wants to be told how great he is. And from what I understand, I mean, that's what his staff does all day long as they say, "You're right, Mr. President. What a great idea, Mr. President," while they don't actually go through with his politics.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen them on camera doing it. They are, for all intents and purposes, the political equivalent of that job in the porn industry called fluffer.
That's right. Hey, before we go too deep down things, and let's just sum
well,
up
I want
right
to take
now,
a, I want to loop back to network, but go.
Okay, well we've got 22 minutes left, and I want some portion of our last 22 minutes, a good portion of it, to be fun. I came up with a fun idea, and once we've gone through this, finish your thoughts and sentences, and then I want to shift us into the last 20 minutes of pure nonsense. Is that okay with you?
Beautiful.
Okay, so finish up your important grown-up thought, and then I'm going to be the little kid that just farts all over the whole damn thing.
Awesome. I can't wait. I'll fart too. So you brought up network, and I thought it was really timely. And
in that voice of yours, I love your voice, by the way. Who doesn't? But you really should do, and you have theater training and everything. One night for your show, you should do that monologue. You should do the whole thing. I mean, it's out of date in a lot of ways. It's addressing 1975 issues. You ought to just read that monologue.
Oh, that would be fun.
Start the show out with it.
That would be fun. And I'll tell you off air about a little plan that I've got in the offing for later this year.
Okay, the grown-up thought.
Grown-up thought. Everybody knows the I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore speech from Network.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Patty Chayefsky was a genius of a writer.
Oh, hell yeah. One of the best.
And Sidney Lumet did a stunning job with the whole film.
Yes.
But there is a moment that, and I'm kind of an amateur historian of the rise of the permanent news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 1976. And in very short order, you will have, as soon as Ronald Reagan arrives, the death of what's called the Fairness Doctrine.
Yep.
And the idea of equal time. And you also have, in roughly this same time frame, the monetization of the news divisions. Mm-hmm. There's this seminal moment when the guy who made ABC's Wide World of Sports profitable, Roon Arledge, gets put in charge of the ABC News Division. And that's a Burmishave sign. Because
Boy, is that a reference that'll...
I want to send the younger listeners off to Google things. It was great for me growing up with rock and roll.
Burmishave.
Yeah. But the monetization of the news divisions. And so there's a scene, and because I'm trying to do this, physician, heal thyself, because there's a scene where it's after the I'm Mad as Hell begins to take off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene, Faye Dunaway... Robert Duvall, where they realize that it's not just some nuttiness, that they can make a buck at it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, Patty Chayefsky becomes a prophet, Dan, because it's like he saw where we were going. Because if you screen Network right now, it's hard not to see the network in question as Fox News. And Howard Beale is earnest, but he gets taken, the idea of Howard Beale gets taken and monetized, and it becomes Bill O'Reilly. So let me roll audio on this just real quick, okay?
Oh, you got it? Oh,
yeah.
Great.
What do you mean you don't know where he is? The son of a bitch is a hit, goddammit! Over 2,000 phone calls! Go down to the mailroom. As of this minute, over 14,000 telegrams. The response is sensational. Herb telling. Herb's phone hasn't stopped ringing. Every goddamn affiliate from Albuquerque to Sandusky. The response is sensational. Yes. All right. For you, Herb. Get back to your office. Moldanian called me. Joe Donnelly called me. We got a goddamn hit, goddammit. Diner showing the Times. We even got an editorial in the holy goddamn New York Times. A call to morality.
I don't know where he is.
That crazy son of a bitch Beale has caught on, so don't tell me you don't know where he is.
He should be jumping off a roof for all I know. The man is insane. He's not responsible for himself. He needs care and treatment. And all you grave robbers think about is that he's a hit.
You know, Max, it's just possible that he isn't insane. That he is, in fact, imbued with some special spirit.
My God, I'm supposed to be the romantic. You're supposed to be the hard-bitten realist.
All right. Mm. Now, Howard Beale obviously fills a void. The audience out there obviously wants a prophet, even a manufactured one, even if he's as mad as Moses. Why, tomorrow he'll have a 50 share, maybe even a 60. Howard Beale is processed instant God, and right now it looks like he may just go over bigger than Mary Tyler Moore.
I am not putting Howard back on the air.
It's not your show anymore, Max. It's mine.
The people want a prophet, even if he's a manufactured one.
Well, you're mentioning Limbaugh and Hannity and all that, but I mean that's really what our president is too, is that he is a mad prophet, and he is saying things that is appealing to people, whether we agree with it or not. It definitely strikes a chord, and it provokes anger and feelings of power. And at the same time, we know, because we read enough things in the news, we know that behind the scenes, there are a lot of people that are very, very afraid. They don't know what the hell is going to come out of this guy's mouth. And that's part of his appeal, right? People say, oh, he says what's on his mind, or he tells it like it is, which is really crazy because he tells it like it isn't. There's something about that that's appealing, the madman prophet. You're absolutely right. There is an equally brilliant scene in that that does not get cited nearly as often as the Mad as Hell speech, which is legendary. But there's a great scene with Howard Beale late in the movie where he's all alone in a room, a dark room, with Ned Beatty, who is, I think, also a network executive. Anyway, Ned Beatty gives him this whole spiel about how he's got to start using his airwaves to talk about the greatness of Shell Oil and the telephone company monopolies and all of this. And that's the gospel he needs to spread is the greatness of capitalism. And he does this wonderful, you know, 3-minute monologue with Peter Finch as Howard Beale, just sitting there listening and taking it all in, and you can see it's registering, and that he really believes that Ned Beatty is the voice of literally of God, and Howard Beale at the end of this long speech, Howard Beale just asks one question. He says, "How do I get people to believe me?" And Ned Beatty says, "You're on television, dummy." That's the answer. You're on television, dummy. People will see it, and they'll believe it because you're telling them that. And you have a power, you know, you have a power being on this podcast. You know, I have a power by being part of it that some people out there might nod their heads and say, yeah, that guy makes sense. And that's power. We've influenced people, or maybe there's somebody out there that misinterprets what you said, say the way that, you know, somebody misinterpreted the Beatles and thought that they should go out and kill people because, you know, somebody said something in Helter Skelter that meant you need to kill people. Anybody that has a voice has power. And now again, because of the internet and social networking,
and don't think for a moment, Dan, that I'm not constantly aware of that. And that's why I'm hypersensitized to it. I try not to say things that people could misinterpret and go and act in it. Because over on the other side, they do it all the time. They get away with it. People do act on what they say. I mean, like the stories we were talking about at the beginning of the program, Cesar Sayoc, who mailed bombs to people, said, "I found Trump and he was like a new drug." And then there's the guy who's going to be walking the streets who was plotting the murder of Supreme Court justices. And his counsel argues that his hit list was no different than the list that Trump has probably put together. I don't know about you, but that makes a little hair stand up on the back of my neck, and it scares the bejesus out of me.
Well, yeah, it is scary, but we all, you know, again, because of the internet, because of Twitter, we have all these forms now of expressing ourselves, and in a way, it's wonderful. We all have voices now. You know, the whole thing of Andy Warhol, the 15 minutes of fame. It's not that we have fame so much, but we definitely have influence. You know, when I write a movie column about something, and I get like 50 likes or, you know, and a bunch of loves on that. What it's really doing is it, you know, there are people who say, I remember that movie too. I love The Bad News Bears, or I loved E.T. And so we commune, we bond, and there are people that respond to that. And more than once, I've had people tell me, you know, because you mentioned a movie I hadn't thought of in 30 years, I watched that movie, I streamed it, you know, so I have influence myself. And it's not that I feel great responsibility, because it's like the worst that's going to happen is that 2 hours of somebody's life is going to be wasted on a movie that I love and they hate. But, you know, we are in an age now where an 18-year-old girl can make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year just by being cute and by endorsing products on YouTube. And that's all it really is I'm cute. And if you use this makeup or you use this shampoo, you can be cute just like me. And for that, they're making more money than I am. I find it just insane that that's all your talent. Your talent is you're cute, you're physically attractive, and you're shameless, and you like attention. So for that, you figured out a way to make a living. And I'm appalled by that. That's, you're not creating a product. You're not creating something that anybody will use in any real purposeful way. You're selling image. And I guess you're selling makeup, or you're selling deodorant or something, or a song you like, or a hotel you're staying at. I mean, there are people that get paid to go to a hotel and spend a weekend for free as long as they post about it. That's nuts. You know, what's my job? To go to a hotel. But that's...
So what do you do for a living? Wear robes.
Well, we're influencers.
Yeah, exactly.
And I took a walk around the lake yesterday, and there was a teenage girl passing by, and she had on a T-shirt. And it could be ironic or whatever, but it said influencer across it. Like, you know, like it'd be like Raiders or Pirates or whatever. Hers just said influencer. So it's like, well, I that's something that one aspires to be these days. I want to be an influencer.
Well, let me do one last thing before we go into our 10 minute silly.
Okay.
Because we've got a lovely, a lovely email here from Tracy.
I remember Tracy's. Tracy's been, I think Tracy's a Facebook friend of mine, and she's done this before. So, hi, Tracy.
I was listening to your
conversation. Same Tracy.
Yes, same Tracy.
Sorry.
Lady cab driver out in L.A.
Lady cab driver.
You do that really well. I was listening to your conversation. You know, if you ever decide to quit properties, I was listening to your conversation while battling Los Angeles traffic, a.k.a. hell on earth. And your conversation about movies that you grew up with that you loved and may or may not still love now made me think about the movies that I loved when growing up as a little black girl in the 70s. The memories came flooding back of sitting in the back seat of the family car at the drive-in, eagerly awaiting what exciting adventures I was about to embark upon when the movie came on the screen. I consider the 70s the golden era of black cinema, not just from the obvious blaxploitation classics like Cleopatra Jones, Cotton Comes to Harlem, Come Back, Charleston Blue, Superfly, and Shaft. By the way, I had the honor of meeting both Richard Roundtree and Ron O'Neill. God, I love living in L.A. These beautiful black women and men were goddesses and gods. They were superheroes. They were there to right the wrongs committed against us by the man. And for a few moments, I felt there was something close to black power, but those feelings were fleeting at best. The movies that gave me sustaining power and where I saw my life were some of the lesser-known classics like Claudine and Cornbread Earl and Me. These two movies told stories about what it was like growing up in marginalized, redlined communities. Claudine, about a single black mother raising her children the best she can.
Diane Carroll.
Yep.
James Earl Jones.
In a country that could not give a damn about a poor black woman trying to make a way out of no way. Cornbread Earl and Me was about the aftermath of the shooting of an unarmed young black man by a white cop. It's been over 40 years since these movies were made, and here's the scary thing. Nothing has changed. The Welfare Reform Act has damn near criminalized being poor, and young black men are still being shot in the street. Even though these movies could be seen as bleak, they both ended with hope and promise. So thank you, Dan, for talking about movies that you love, because it made me think of movies that I love as well. By the way, P.S., I'm a black lesbian woman, so you didn't offend me at all. So you've even been afforded expiation. So you've got that going for you, which is good.
No, listen, I value any perspective that is not mine, and I always want to learn and be entertained by any perspective that's not mine. So it's wonderful to hear what you have to say, and I'd love for you, Tracy, because I do believe I don't think I'm wrong in saying that you and I are Facebook friends. I'd love to see you write some stuff like that on your page and make sure I see it, about what it was like for you seeing Claudine. Or I wonder if you've seen that moment in the Oscars when Isaac Hayes came out and did the theme from Shaft, and he's covered in the gold chains and he wins the frickin' Oscar. I mean, that was just amazing that you know, Oscars usually went to like guys like Burt Bacharach and suddenly you got Isaac frickin' Hayes up there on the stage just looking amazing. And he's got an Oscar in his hand. I would love to hear your perspective, and also on film that's happening today. And I have to confess to you also that the movies I have loved list, it could have a hell of a lot more representation than I'm afraid it does. You know, some of that is the fault of the movie industry itself, not producing enough movies that show the Black American experience. Not all in the 70s, it was actually, the I hate that term, blaxploitation, by the way, just because it indicates you're being exploited. And to me, it was the exact opposite. You were given a voice. Now, you were being exploited. I'm sure the creators of those movies were being exploited in terms of money, that they weren't paid nearly what they deserved to be paid. And the profits probably went to studios that were not black people or people of color. But I'd love to also hear what you think about Us, or think about Boys in the Hood in the 90s, or the whole legacy of Spike stuff. I mean, Spike has made like a movie a year since 86. And some of them are fantastic. Some of them not so much.
Yeah, he's got the prolificness of a Woody Allen without all the creepy baggage.
And listen, the difference between what Woody does or what what's the guy I'm blanking, the guy that just did Us and the other one. Anyway, those guys are making movies about racism right now, that it still exists, it's still powerful. Whereas when I'm just so, and I know I've railed about Green Book in the past, but movies like Green Book and other movies, that it's like, well, okay, it happened in the South a long time ago and we've learned from it. No, we have not. And it does not.
Yeah, that would be that would be the Chief Justice John Roberts review. Yes.
Right. As long as it's wonderful that we remember history, a Mississippi Burning or something like that, or anything about Martin Luther King or Malcolm X. It's good, but we can't just make it about that it happened in the past, because then that just makes it seem like that's past and it's not. I don't have to tell you. God knows I'm white-splaining like hell to you, Tracy. I'm going to just apologize all over the damn place. But I don't have to tell you. It happens all the time. It's there now. In there's still churches being burnt. You know, that shouldn't be happening. There are neo-Nazis. As I like to say, Nazis. There are people that think Nazis are okay. Did we learn nothing from Raiders of the Lost Ark? Did we not sit through this movie and go, well, those are easily identifiable bad guys? When nowadays, some people happen to call them very fine people. I won't say who, but we know that guy.
Yeah, wouldn't you love, and this is just silly, wouldn't you love to get a whole bunch of Trump people and put them in a theater and give them a screening of a screening of Raiders of the Lost Ark and see who they cheer for and who they boo? I bet they cry when the big Nazi asshole backs into the airplane propeller.
Yeah, because he's strong. He's not a pussy.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So
okay, we've got 3 minutes left. This is what I did. A crazy thing I did, Bob, is that I had originally come up with a list of 25 questions about Bob, because I wonder. I don't listen to all your podcasts. I don't, or all your broadcasts. I don't do that. I confess. But when I do listen, you talk about the world a lot. You don't talk very much about you, and I don't think you should. But I think every once in a while, I think it would be fun to just for all of us who do listen to you, just know a little bit more about you. So I originally had 25 questions, and I had this silly idea that I was going to do a random number generator and get through all 25. That's not going to happen. I have question number 25 is a game show kind of question.
Yes.
So I want to save that for last. Pick a number between 1 and 24, and I'm going to ask you that question, and then I'm going to follow it up with a game show question.
Nine.
You ready?
Nine.
Okay. Number nine, the question is, what songs do you sing in the shower? Do you sing in the shower?
I do.
What are your go-tos?
Norwegian Wood. You're the Cat. Trying to think. God help me. Whatever great 80s tune has most recently been ruined by a pharmaceutical ad. Just because I'm trying to fight back against, the company. Lately, it would be, oh, 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 it's magic, because they're advertising a fucking diabetes drug with it.
Yeah, my go-tos are usually Beatles songs because I know the words to them all. I also, there's a song from a musical called Carousel that I was in when I was 16 years old. And there's a song called If I Loved You. And it's a gorgeous song. And I find myself singing that or Nat King Cole's Mona Lisa.
Oh, now that's one. My Good Mood in the Shower song is almost like being in love.
Yeah. And then if the warm water's hitting my vocal cords and they're feeling nice and loose and I feel ambitious, I'll try a Stevie Wonder song, like Love's in Need of Love Today.
Jesus, you even know the words?
Oh, I know all the words to those because Song's in the Key of Life.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said, no. I'm sorry. You said Stevie Wonder. And I had this weird vision of you singing Stevie Nicks in the shower. I so apologize, Dan.
No, because then I get my shawl. It's hard to spin around with the with a shawl in the shower.
In the shower, right? Shower shawl. Hey, marketing.
Okay, it's 9 p.m. I'm gonna finish it up with a game show quiz question.
Yes.
Because everybody listens to you thinking you're so darn smart about politics and American stuff. So we're gonna do this sort of like one of those money things. This is the money quiz, in fact.
Okay.
For $1,
yes.
Bob Kincaid.
Yes.
Who is on the $1 bill?
George Washington.
George Washington. Good. Ding, ding, ding. You've won $1. Would you like to go for more money, Bob?
I'll go for more money, Dan. Believe me.
Who's on the $2 bill?
Thomas Jefferson.
Ding, ding, ding. You're up to $3. $5 bill.
Abraham Lincoln.
Good. Now that's $8. And every time I watch like Jeopardy or something, you know, I'm playing along too. So
I'm fucking nervous.
I'm hoping all your listeners are shouting at their computers or their iPhones or something. $10 bill. Who's on the $10 bill?
Alexander Hamilton.
Alexander Hamilton. I'm rapping Alexander Hamilton. Okay, so what we're up to? $18. $20 bill.
Andrew Jackson should be Harriet Tubman.
Very good. That's what, $58? No. 18.
Don't count on me for the cipher. I still got my shoes on.
$38. You've got $38 I owe you. So, Grant. I gave away the answer.
I already knew it. Ulysses S. Grant.
You know that. $100 bill. You know that.
Benjamin Franklin.
Right. Okay. $500. The $500 bill was discontinued in 1969. Who was on the $500 bill?
Okay. The 500 was either the 500 or the 1,000 was Grover Cleveland.
That must have been 1,000 because it's not the 500. That's the only phone a friend I'm going to give you.
Okay.
I'm that friend.
The $500 bill.
I didn't give you the chance to decline to go there. You would have gone there anyway.
I would have gone there. We're playing for unreal money.
I'm not paying you the money actually. Anyway, you know.
Right. I know. That's the whole purpose here.
You want a hint, Bob?
Yeah, can I have a hint?
Okay. There is a mountain named after that.
McKinley.
That's right. That's your history lesson for the day, kids. President McKinley was on used to be on the $500 bill, and now it's discontinued. So.
And Grover Cleveland.
Wasn't Harriet Tubman on the $2 bill?
No.
Didn't they put her on?
No. No. Susan B. Anthony got put on the $1 coin that nobody used.
Right. And which amendment did Susan B. Anthony put her weight and muscle behind to get passed?
Ouch. 19th?
19th Amendment. Struck down that restrictive rule. 19. That's my Schoolhouse Rock reference there. Hey, it's 9:03. Should we go?
Yeah, I guess we should. I just heard your alarm go off. You've got meds to take.
I've got meds to take, and the next show has to be on, right? I don't want people getting mad at us.
No, we're rerunning here, but a lot of people are going over to check in with Mike Malloy. By the way, Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele, doggone it.
And by the way, over on CBS All Access, the new Twilight Zone is out, and it's his doing. So I'm really anxious now that I've finished with Star Trek Discovery to move on.
Yeah, I will check that out. I'm very anti-reboot. I really hate the whole thing of reboots. I just pine for the days of original scripts and stories. But I loved Get Out. I loved Us. I really did. And so, you know, I'm going to give this guy a try. I'm going to violate my no reboot rule.
And by the way, one last piece of trivia for both of us, because I think we both would have been lost on this. Randy in PA tells us, James Madison was on the $5,000 bill.
I did not know there was such a thing.
Nor I.
Randy, you get all the money.
Yes. All the imaginary money. And by the way, who's on the $100,000 bill in the Game of Life, Dan?
Game of Life? Well, that's Art Linkletter.
Yes.
Because he used to endorse that. See, right. I know this because I'm old.
Well, maybe they can reboot the Game of Life. And
membership has its privileges.
Maybe they can reboot the Game of Life and Wayne Brady can be on the $100,000 bill.
Why not? Wasn't that, who used to do the thing? Could Wayne Brady something a bitch? Do you know this one? There was like a thing where like
I'm Wayne Brady, bitch. Yeah, from
it was a thing where like Wayne Brady would like attack people. Like,
that was from Chappelle's show.
That's right, Dave Chappelle. I missed that.
And one last note, and this will just make you feel good before you down your meds. From Lady B, to sort of put a bow on it all. Thank you for an excellent show. Be healthy, Dan, and continue to prosper, Bob. You two meeting and talking to each other is kismet. Thanks for taking me where the wind blows. Signed, Lady B.
Lady B, you are the wind beneath my wings.
And thank God. Thank God.
Did you ever know? I'm not going to do it.
You were my hero. Yes.
My voice is sore from talking to you. Thank you, Lady B. Thank you, all of you, to listen. How many people listen to this show? Do you have any idea?
It's somewhere in the small thousands.
Well, bless your pea-picking hearts, all small thousands of you.
It's absolutely in the dozens.
So I like coming in once a month. That's what I like to do.
I store up my reservoir of adequacy and save them for these nights.
And next time, I swear I'm going to get even more. You thought I was frivolous tonight? Boy, oh boy, you ain't seen frivolous.
Oh, I want the other 23 questions. You got me itching
it's
now.
It's going to be. And we're going to do a number random number generator.
Yes. And on the way out, by the way, you annoyed Brother Deacon Asa just a little bit.
Oh, no.
Early in the program. Probably the greatest West Virginian of all time was Chuck Yeager. Really, Dan? What's Bob? Chopped liver? And I explained to him, no, I'm adequate.
But also, you were born in Alabama, right?
Well, yes, I was.
I was born. Do you ever hear that song, Patches, by the way?
Oh, yes.
I was born down in Alabama, far side of the woods.
It was written
then
by...
Then one day, Daddy died.
It was written by Rick Hall, and he talked Clarence Carter into doing it.
Patches.
And the difference between... Clarence Carter singing Patches and Clarence Carter singing Clarence Carter, Clarence Carter, Clarence Carter, shit! You know, there's a big, big difference. Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
that would be Clarence Carter. That would be Clarence Carter stroking. We got to get out of here, Dan.
We got to get out of this place if it's the last thing we ever do.
And it may damn well be. Dan,
Bob,
Dan Fisher.
Bob, there's a better life for me and you. Let's get out of here.
What a great, that was just, you just, okay. And I'll close with a line.
See you in a month.
I'll close with a line from a local hero. Ah, booger. I meant to say cheerio. And we're out.
Later, Dan.
And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in these conversations. These conversations with Dan are pure magic for me, and I'm glad y'all enjoy them too. And Dan will be back in about a month's time. And, well, I've got a month to agonize over 23 questions that I don't know. Whew. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky for popping by for a little bit earlier this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you. Thank you, John Fox. In Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and always, 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 Gina It's all for you. Later, y'all.